Call the City of Hamburg Council Meeting to order August 8th, 2013, and we'll start with the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Evening. Guess we'll start out with some public comment.
Everybody here, I think, is here for an agenda item.
Well, I'm proud. I just wanted to talk to you and hear about this.
Okay.
You want to do that right away before you get into it or whatever?
We can do it at the line item, I believe. Unless council has any other wishes to address that now.
No. Any other public comment? No? Then we'll go on to agenda review. Any added items?
City council, few items. I have updated August claims list. Updated delinquency report and nuisance complaint list. And then also, Ms. Stone, did you get a chance to review the ad for the paper?
Yeah. So there's a couple things I need to do to that.
Okay.
I can email that to you tomorrow.
Sure. There's...
I mean, you can make a motion to accept it subject
to speaking. Sure, yep. Sure, we will do that. And then under Public Works Maintenance Worker, we'll address the ad for the opening for Public Works Maintenance. And that's all I have. So if there's anything else council has.
Is there anything else? Added items? Are they looking for a motion for the agenda?
So moved. Second.
Made and seconded. Approved. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Carried.
Carried. We got the consent agenda.
Anybody have any comments on the memo from Ms. Perry, our city consultant, concerning 331 Marie Avenue?
I'd be looking for.
I have no problem with that.
Okay.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
Okay. Second.
Motion was made and seconded and approved. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Approved. Carried. Justin Black, City Engineer of SCH. How you doing?
Good.
Good.
Good evening, council members. Thanks for having me tonight. And I guess I'd be happy to start off with answering any questions the gentleman has, or if you want me to present the project a little bit, I can do that either way.
I think everybody's familiar with project. I think we probably can hear comments first before we get in depth with the change order.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll maybe stand here so I can address everyone.
That'd be fine.
Oh, I want to talk about the tile behind my house.
Okay. The cell pump tile line behind your house, from my understanding, that's staying in place. No changes are being made to that.
We have a problem. How do you engineer to make the water run through a tile with a hole?
Okay, you're talking about the tile line that's in the street.
No, the tile that comes from behind my house that runs through the storm sewer.
Okay, all right. So you're talking about your cell pump line.
Yep.
All right. What we're proposing is a combination cell pump drain tile line. The line in the street would be a PVC line.
That's in the new street.
That's in the new street.
Justin, if I may intervene, I think what Mr. Seward's relating to is the project that we did 2 years ago with the replacement of the lines.
Okay, so now...
Am I correct in that?
So now the project we're talking about...
Not this project. Okay, so this seems to be in reference to the 2011 project.
Okay, all right. So I guess, what's your question regarding that? I thought it was...
If I hook my sump pump into that line, how can I get the water to the storm sewer without all the holes in the line? There's a tile put back there, the holes all the way around it.
Okay.
And there's a catch basin back here, no bottom, and it's a PVC catch basin.
All right.
And when it rains now, it's only a matter of a couple of hours when the sump pump is wild. But the water doesn't have to soak in the ground. It runs into that whole area, into that tile that's down there. Now, if I want to pump my water out, and I pump it into that line, how is it going to get 300 feet or 250 feet to the line with all the holes in it? So last guy told me, says it works for field tile. Well, that tile was 3 feet in the ground, and some pumps 8 feet in the ground. Now, how does that tile get my water with them holes up here?
Okay, you know, standing here tonight, I guess, I don't know if I'll be able to answer your question. I maybe have to come out and meet with you and take a look at it. The project was a project that was done by an engineer prior to me. But I'd be happy to take a look at the plans, take a look at, you know, the situation, and give you some answers as far as...
Now, that would be another cost that's going to get assessed to us again?
You know, I'd be happy to do that at no cost to me. Or the city.
The last guy that was here, he says, well, it works in the field tile. Well, in the fields, the only one to drain the top 3 feet.
Okay.
Here we got the sump pumps down there. If I pump it up there and it goes in them holes, it's going to come right back to my sump pump. Because it did when I dumped it on top of the ground in the back.
Does the tile line fill up?
No.
It doesn't.
Well, I ain't hooked up to it yet.
But when it rains, when you go up and take a look, is it?
No.
It doesn't fill up?
I can go there. Well, when it rains real hard, it probably, some of it runs away. How much of it soaks down into the ground, I don't know. I can't do that.
Well, if it's only okay with the council, I guess I'd just soon take a look at it, you know, and see what its concerns are firsthand, and take a look at the plans, and then, you know, I can get back to
it. Yeah, my sump pump runs twice as long since they put that tile in what it did before.
Okay.
So it shouldn't be running now. We need that domain for a month, but it's still pumping.
Okay. Justin?
Yeah.
I know my biggest concern is... I think the biggest factor is we directional board at the sewer line.
Okay?
We eliminated that old 6-inch clay tile with cement, and some were cement, some were tar joints. And I think the biggest thing is we've got a sealed pipe down there.
Sure.
10 feet now.
Absolutely. It's not taking the groundwater.
Yeah.
Which is what the city wanted because it's not all over your standards.
That catch basin does have a bottom in it.
Okay.
It was one of the PVC catch basins.
Sure, yep.
But I know what the biggest concern is where the water goes in that 12-inch drain tile, it's a perforated tile.
Right.
Where he thinks it's just recirculating, which possibly could be. But I think the biggest factor is that we eliminated that old sewer line that was taking all the infiltration, taking the pressure. I might be wrong.
Yeah. What Larry's saying is true. I mean, what the city did when they installed the new sanitary sewer line is you created a water drain system. And that's what you wanted, because all the groundwater was infiltrating, infiltrating and flowing into the sanitary sewer system. You were treating clear water, which costs the city money, and essentially overloaded your system. When we put that watertight pipe in, like Larry had mentioned, we're no longer draining all of that clear water, which is probably why the gentleman's sump pump is running a little more often, because we're not draining that through the sanitary sewer system. So I guess that,
but when I pump it into that line now, is it going to run, or is it going to soak right back down in the ground and back again?
You know, given the type of soils we have here in Hamburg, they're pretty tight clay soils. I just can't see it infiltrating back around your basement. I don't foresee an issue there, but you have to take a look at it.
I know it did. I realize David's point.
Yep.
Where it's perforated pipe all the way around.
Right.
And it's laid in P-rock.
Right.
But we took a 6-inch line away that was taking that pressure away, which is not, this new 8-inch line isn't doing it.
Absolutely. I guess the short answer to your question, I'll still come take a look at it. The short answer to your question, I wouldn't see an issue with that. It'd be different if that tile line was running right next to your foundation of your house. It's out behind in your backyard.
Out about 35 feet from my sump pump.
Yeah, I don't see that there'd be any issue with the water recirculating, especially given the type of soils we have in the city of Hamburg. They're pretty tight clay soils. It takes a while for that water to permeate through there. So we don't see any issue with that recirculating. No more issue than if you have a 35-foot long hose on your sump and you run it in the grass.
Well, that's what I did have, and then it ran, and then they told me, well, it was recirculated. So I put a line out on the street because the engineer wouldn't put a pipe on the street at that time to take the water, so a line is running over the top. And then now it's running, the street's getting green. And
that's okay.
No.
That's
okay. And if I spend the money to put it into that tile with the holes in, and it's going to be the same what I had before. It's just going to keep circulating again like this.
I don't believe it will.
Well, you said it did when I ran on top of the ground, so that's...
Part of the problem with running on top of the ground is you didn't get actions. That's really the problem with sump pump training on the street.
I agree with you, but the last engineer says, well, we can't run it in it because it's soaked into the street. If you run it on top of the curb, it will crack, so it soaks in there. Well,
he said it's not going to
soak back, and I'll hook up to it and get it off the street. But I just still don't understand how you make water out of the pipe with all holes in it.
All right, thanks for your comments.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you.
I guess if the council has any questions regarding the street improvement project, jumping back to that, Robert, I'd be happy to answer that. There is a change order in front of you. We did make some changes to the project with regarding to the drain tile and combined sump pump line. But outside of that, I guess I'd be open to answer any questions about the project. Leave it at that, I guess.
I was just looking at that. This is how many half perforated pipe.
Now, right.
Talk about that. Okay.
Yep. The pipe that we're proposing for Robert Avenue is half perforated. So it just has the corrugations on the top. The water from the street permeates down through there. The bottom holds the water from the sump pump lines. And we have, I have installed a lot of this type of pipe, this type of sump pump drainage system in a number of communities, thousands of feet. We haven't had any issues or any problems with it. It really, really works well. It's a good combination system.
Well, I think at the last meeting, I think the concern was that pipe getting, you know, what Mr. Siebert just
right.
talked about, those same type issues.
Sure. The 4-inch pipe does have enough capacity. You know, a 4-inch pipe at this grade has about 100 gallons per minute capacity. And if you take a look at most sump pumps, the nameplate rating is maybe 40 or 50 gallons per minute. They only run for 30 seconds, 30 or 40 seconds. So you're talking about 20 gallons per minute. This block has 5 homes on it, so it's 100 gallons per minute. So we do have the capacity in that 4-inch line, even if all sump pumps are running simultaneously. A little safety factor in that is a 4-inch line, 500 feet long, which is the length of the project, takes about 400 gallons just to fill the line up. So it takes a lot of water even just to fill that 4-inch line. And keep in mind, it's always running out on the backside towards the catch basin. So like I said, we have installed a lot of this style combination sump pump drain tile line. Haven't had any issues. The big thing is to keep the roof leaders, roof gutters, keep those from being connected to these types of systems. The problem there is you get leaves or other junk in there, and also you got problems with plugging. So it's sump pump only. That's all that should be allowed in these lines. and you'll have the capacity, especially in a situation like this where you got 500 feet of street and five homes. I really don't see any issues.
So, I don't know, help me. I mean, I'm not an engineer, and I know that's pretty much nothing. I'll admit that as far as when it comes to the siting of that. But so we're still going to have 530 linear feet of that 4-inch corrugated or perforated pipe all the way around, and then we're also going to have 530 feet of the half perforated. Am I reading that correct?
That's correct. We're going to have a tile line on each side of the street, and the tile line that's perforated all the way around is on the side of the street where the homes already have the sump pump line in the back, like the gentleman had mentioned. So there'll be no sump pump connections to that line, so we put in the fully perforated tile line. The other side of the street where we need the sump pump connections, there we're just using the half perforation. So again, we're not infiltrating water back into that street subgrade. As the sump pump lines pump into that line, the bottom portion of the pipe that's not perforated carries the water. So that's why we're using two different types of pipe materials.
Any other questions on street improvements for Justin? For Robert Avenue? I'd be looking for a motion to approve the change order.
So moved.
It's been so moved. Is there a second?
Seconded.
It's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion has been carried. All right.
When is this project supposed to be started about?
I'd have to ask the contractor, but I think probably end of September, sometime in that.
Okay.
Okay.
Done about October 15th.
Okay. Is there any other questions for Justin?
Did you want me to talk a little bit? I know you're in the budget time of the year, and I can visit a little bit about budgeting for up-and-coming street improvement projects. Typically, what I tell city councils when you're looking at future projects during budgeting time is kind of take a two-prong approach. One of the prongs is looking at needs that you have in the community, whether it's street surfacing needs like what we did with Robert Avenue, or whether it's a bigger project where you're looking at underground utilities, replacing those leaky pipes, water main, more of a comprehensive total reconstruct project. So I start by identifying the needs, which projects are on the top of the list, and then on the other side of the equation, take a look at, okay, what type of budget are we looking to spend for those projects, and you kind of got to align those two and put them together. If we're talking about a smaller pavement improvement type project like what's in front of us tonight, typically it's something that you can, depending on the size of the project, look at general tax levy dollars or those types of funding sources. As soon as we get to a larger project, like a larger mill and overlay project that's maybe several hundred thousand dollars, or that street reconstruct projects, right now street reconstruct projects, you know, a couple hundred thousand a block, so it adds up pretty quick. It doesn't take a lot of street recon before you're at $400,000 or $500,000 street project. When you're looking at those types of projects, these larger street recon projects that are $400,000 or $500,000, maybe even $1 million, there's not many cities. In fact, I'll go so far to say is there's only a handful in the state that can pay for those with cash out of their general tax levy, whether it's savings or just using tax dollars. Most cities, almost all of them, bond for that. The city actually borrows money to pay the contractor, pay the engineer. Now, Minnesota has a state law that says anytime a city issues a general obligation bond, they're required by state law to assess at least 20% of the project cost. It's a state law. It's been on the books since the mid-1950s. So when you take a look at most communities, they actively assess street and utility improvement projects. Just going back to what I said earlier, anytime you start talking about these larger projects that are $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, there's just no communities that have that type of cash on hand or that type of budget. So they borrow the money. and they assess a minimum of 20%. Now, most cities actually assess a little bit more than that. They assess 25 or 30%. And that just gives you a little bit of wiggle room. You don't want to drop below that 20%. You don't want to go into the project all of a sudden assessing only 19.9 or 18% because one of the properties you couldn't assess for one reason or the other. So you give yourself a little wiggle room at that 25 or 30%, and you go through what we call the special assessment process or the public improvement process. Again, state law dictates the steps that are required in order for a city to levy special assessments, and you need to levy a special assessments to borrow the money. Your bond council that gives the city money, the first question they typically ask for is provide the documentation that you went through the special assessment process.
Justin, what other option do you have besides a referendum?
There really is no other option. And I know other communities have struggled with this. We were just working with the city of Glencoe, your next-door neighbor here, over the past year. They wrestled with this for about a year. How can we pay for these projects without levying special assessments? And after a year, it wasn't quite a year, but after 6 or 8 months, they came to the conclusion, we can't. We need to levy special assessments. And actually, I brought with a list of communities. Just find it in my packet here. In the area, I put this list together earlier this summer, but I'll pass it out to you. These are just communities in, I'll say, the two or three county area here that have levied special assessments for street reconstruction projects in the past 5 years. And this isn't all-inclusive by any means, but it gives you an idea of what some of your neighboring communities are doing. And you can see there's not many cities in the area that haven't levied special assessments for street improvement projects. Actually, there's only one community that I can think of that doesn't assess projects. That's the city of Minnetonka. It's a community that's flush with cash. They're in the metro area. And that's really the only community that I know of that does not levy special assessments. So I guess that's probably a 10-minute speech that I could have covered in five, but I wanted to give you a snapshot. As far as planning for next year, I'd be happy to sit down with you. I don't know if you want to take the time tonight, but I'd be happy to come back to another meeting or sit down with Jeremy and try to, again, come up with that two-pronged approach. List the street improvement needs, try to align that with a budget, and then move forward from there, maybe even meeting with your financial advisor to try to put together a program or a plan. As far as a special assessment policy, I know Jeremy has some examples. I visited with him a little bit. My recommendation from that standpoint would be to have the policy in place and approved by council before you even initiate the project. So when you have that first public meeting with the residents who are going to be specially assessed, you can pass out the assessment policy and say, here's the policy that's in place that the city has approved. That way there's no question or doubt in anyone's mind where they're at from an assessment standpoint. And as we develop the project, we can prepare estimated assessment dollar amounts that we can distribute to council members and the general public. So we're not going into this blind. We know about what the assessments are going to be. And that's a good approach.
Well, I think some of this concern came up at last meeting is, we somewhat have a policy in place, but we've never assessed for overlay projects.
Sure.
So one of the streets we have coming up that could possibly need an overlay project is Jacob here.
Right.
That's a big street.
It's a big cost. And it gets into that category where I mentioned earlier, you just don't have the cash on hand or the general tax levy dollars available to pay for that. So then you look at general obligation bonds, and you have to assess for that. And there's a lot of communities that are assessing for overlay projects.
And how long does that take before, if you want to do the street, how long do you have to start before?
For an overlay project, I would start this fall already. I wouldn't wait any longer. I know you're going through the budget process now, but if that street rises to the top and it's something you'd like to do, I wouldn't wait until the first of the year or even Christmas. I would get moving on it now and and say October already, just so we have plenty of time to go through all of the public improvement process, the hearings, mailing out the notices, all of those things that are required by state law.
Now, Jeremy, a while back we had SEH assess all the streets and just gave us a worksheet and a booklet and all that stuff.
We do have a maintenance plan, street maintenance plan.
Right. And that, have we updated that with the most current information as far as the potential cost? Because this project here was estimated to be, what, $57,000, and now we're looking at
$67,000.
Yeah, almost $70,000. And so have we updated those so we can have an accurate? Because I'd hate to come sit down here, do the budget, say, okay, we're going to do something, and all of a sudden now we're 10, 15, 20% over budget. Well,
And I think that's a great approach, and that's part of, you know, identifying what streets in those lists of that report that we prepared, and then updating those cost estimates on the other side to make sure that they align. And you know, that's something that we can do pretty efficiently once we identify what street we want to do, whether it's Jacob or any other street. We can take a couple hours and update it with the more current cost estimate.
And what me and Justin, we've kind of, you know, laid out a draft game plan here. And basically what we said was we would use that street maintenance. We'd narrow it down to two streets.
Mm-hmm.
We'd prioritize that one street for next year so we could look at, I'd have Justin then put some estimated costs together before we get to the final budget phase. So that way we look at what numbers we're looking at. So one, we can look at one of two options. One, are we able to finance this through general funds?
Right.
Or two, is this going to get to a point where we are going to need to look at, you know, looking at that assessment policy and assessing 20% of this if we want to do it next year for funding?
Right.
So really it comes down to, can we pay for it out of the general fund, or do we got to, you know, go into funding and get bonds for the project? So that's kind of what we've talked about doing as we go through the budget process here. That's going to probably be the main topic of the budget, is going to be street improvements.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to, you know, sit down with you, Jeremy, and take a look at that and you know, update the cost, like you had mentioned, Chris, to get to current dollars so that we're not short selling ourselves there. But that's something we should start on now, really, as part of your budget process.
We got any more questions for Justin Black on street improvements or assessment policies?
Well, City Council, one other thing I would like Justin just to touch base on quickly is one of the things also came up last meeting was difference between doing an overlay versus doing a total redone.
Right. No, mill and overlay, especially like this Robert Avenue project where we're reclaiming the base, grading and shaping it, and putting a complete new mat on top, you're going to see another 15 to 20 years of street life out of Robert. Conversely, if we're looking at completely reconstructing it, the street doesn't need complete recon. That's a perfect candidate for exactly what we're doing. But if we were to completely reconstruct a street with that length and dimension, we're probably looking at 2.5 to 3 times the cost. So going from a mill and overlay project to a complete street recon is a big jump. When you start replacing curb and gutter, replacing yards with sidewalk and driveways, it's a huge increase in cost. Now there's cases where we're forced into complete street recon because of the underground utilities. Once you start replacing sanitary sewer and water main, you're digging 7 or 8 foot deep trenches in the middle of the street. By the time you get done with all the backhoe work, the street is gone. There's no street left. So there we're forced into completely rebuilding the street. There's just really no other options. But again, a street like Robert with the underground utilities are in good shape. For the most part, the curb lines are in good shape. We're doing some minor repairs there to match flow lines. It's a perfect candidate for what we're doing, this mill and overlay project. Get another 15 to 20 years out of it. And to be honest with you, because we are reclaiming the whole street and restoring the crown back to a 2% crown, we can take a look at it in 15 or 20 years, and we could look at another mill and overlay on that street. We could edge mill it and overlay it. Because we don't have a 3.5 or 4% crown. Typically, you don't like to overlay streets too many times just because the crown gets so steep. I mean, we keep adding
bituminous to the center of the road, at last you've got a pretty steep road where, you know, the kids can't even get out there on the bike without tipping over. But this is a perfect candidate, and that's why we recommended what we did. I think it's the best bang for your buck. You're getting the most value out of it. But like I said, there's certain streets where one of two things. Either you've got underground utility replacement work, or the street is just too far gone where you need to do some level of reconstruction. I know there's some streets and communities that I work for where last winter it was to the point where they put the plow blade down and they're rolling the bituminous off into the grass. And you don't want to wait until you get to that level, because then you really got issues, especially when it comes to snow plowing season. They had an absolute mess. Towards the end of the year, they're leaving the plow blade a couple inches high just because they were taking the street surfacing off. And, you know, there were some folks that weren't too happy about that because their lawns were pretty dark after all the bituminous comes off. So we don't want to wait to a point where it gets that bad, because then we really start having to throw money at it. You know, you can compare it to any home maintenance improvement or your car. You can let things go, but if you let them go too long, all of a sudden you're spending a lot of money on major improvements.
Is there any other questions on street improvements or assessments?
Justin,
do
you
want to
have a
recon
on this thing, or just, you know,
roll
some?
I think we could just get out on the road and take a look at things and get it going. I think it'd be fine. I'll get in touch with you with some dates. Okay, that sounds great. And then I could maybe combine that with meeting with the gentleman that was here tonight, if need be. So.
Sure.
Okay. Any other questions?
I don't know. You know, in regards to assessments, I mean, I struggle with the idea of just this being sitting out an assessment policy to assess everything and anything possible. And I understand budgets are limited in our community, especially only having, you know, not even 600 people in there, and our tax base is relatively low. In regards to, you know, if we did go for some bonding on that, has there ever been a conversation, or has there ever been anything done where there, for lack of a better term, rebated back the assessment?
I have not heard of anything like that. And I don't know how that would work as a function of tax dollars when you write a check of, you know, public tax money to a private individual.
The only thing I've ever heard of other cities doing would be borrowing basically money from your other funds, like your enterprise funds, maybe to cover, you know, expense to avoid bonding.
Right.
I don't know the exact hoops you got to jump through for that, but I know that is a possibility to borrow that money and pay back them funds through the tax levy. So I know, like I've said, there isn't many options. And, you know, and I agree, if that's the policy they've always had, that's great. But the concern I have, let's say you have Sophia Avenue, and we just want to mill and overlay that. Well, let's say it comes in at $200,000. I mean, now do we wait 3 years till we get that money so we can do the project? What if it needs to be done next year? Mm-hmm. There's other things come into play, like Jacob Street. See, that's priority. Well, you're talking six blocks.
Right.
So what are we talking? $600,000 maybe? I mean,
right.
You know, depending on the size of the blocks.
Yep.
I can't see doing a block at a time.
Yeah,
as you have the money.
Right.
That's my concern as a treasurer.
Yeah, it's not very economical to do it that way either.
Plus, it would cost more.
Right, there's an economy of scale. You know, one thing with the assessments is the payback for the resident is spread over the same amount of time in which the city borrows the money. So let's say the city has a 10-year loan or a 10-year bond issue. Typically, what happens then is the assessment policy, or the assessments are spread over a 10-year timeline. Each year, it shows up on the individual person's taxes, spring and fall. For one advantage of assessing for a mill and overlay project, I don't know if you want to call this an advantage or just a discussion point, is typically the costs of a mill and overlay assessment are considerably less than what you'd see for like a street and utility recon or a sanitary sewer improvement project, where you're talking a lot of dollars being assessed back to the homeowner. If we're talking just a mill and overlay Well, for example, I think we could maybe use Robert as an example here. There's five homes on each side, so that's 10 parcels. So $67,000, if you would assess 100%, that'd be $6,700, $6,000 per person. If you assess 50%, it's $3,000 per person. If you assess 25%, you're talking about a $1,500 per lot assessment, and that'd be using, you know, the Robert Avenue project that's in front of us right now. So a $1,500 assessment, you spread that over 10 years at maybe a 4% interest rate. I understand it's still money out of a resident's pocket, but it's not a significant impact from the standpoint of an assessment that's maybe 10 grand.
Because typical, what do you say, on an overlay is 20 to 30%?
Yeah, I would say 20 to 30%.
And recon's probably 50?
Yeah, it really depends on, you know, what type of work we're doing, but I'd say an overlay is typically 20 to 30%. So again, using Robert Avenue as example, these people would be assessed about $1,500. Over 10 years, I don't know what that would be per year. With no interest, it'd be $150 a year. Throw a little interest on there, $175,
$165
a year.
I was just curious if there was any, if anybody had ever done anything like that.
Especially
dealing with smaller communities.
Right. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard that. And I just don't know if there's any way around that. I guess I'd want to check with like a bond attorney or even the city attorney to see the legality.
I guess what I can do, Chris, is you know, once we get into this process, I can check with our financial advisor. Maybe she can write a memo on options for financing for street improvements.
Yep. Well, if you guys think of anything else, you know, let Jeremy know and he can get in touch with me and I get back to you one way or the other. Otherwise, we'll kick this Robert Avenue project off, get that under our belt, and then work together towards something for next year. Thanks for having me tonight.
Yeah. Thanks, Justin.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for coming.
You bet.
That's some old city business.
I have no updates other than the free health screening for employees. Tentatively have that set for Tuesday, October 8th from 4 to 6:45 before city council meeting. And then also for fire department members, tentatively set up for Monday, October 28th from starting at 5 o'clock.
Bob and Chris doing on their NIMS training. Have you looked at it yet? Or?
We'll try to get it done this weekend since it's a longer weekend.
Maybe Bob, maybe we'll work together on that, huh? Chris, maybe two heads are better than one. I don't know. But anyway. Okay. Anything else on old city business? Go to Public Works.
Mr. Butterly will not be attending tonight. I kind of asked him as a favor if he would at least attend the meeting. But he had stated that he will not be attending tonight. So basically, I'll just give an update on the items under his report. As far as community center repairs, spoke to get that started within the next couple of weeks. I met with a contractor on picking out the brick. So as we talk, basically, for where the window is there, he's going to go right down the middle there, cut that, and go to the door. So that part, that's what portion of the brick that will be replaced. So hopefully in a couple weeks he'll be starting on that. Water tower, they were supposed to come Sunday, then it was Monday, then it was Tuesday, now it's tomorrow. So they will be here to clean and paint the water tower, hopefully, tomorrow. Cleaning and televising the sanitary sewer lines, they possibly will be here the week of September 3rd. That's just tentative right now, but need to confirm that with them. lift station alarm system, basically, sounds like we've been having some glitches with it, but I think that could possibly just be power surges from what I know in talking with Mr. Byerly, because he's been called out numerous times. A concern I have is that moving forward here, that every time there's a glitch, I don't think, and maybe myself, I don't feel, or council, we want to be paying a person a 2-hour call out for every time that thing glitches. So I think we need to look at something, or maybe talk with Floyd Securities that there's some other type setup we can do with that. Because the problem we're having right now is, as soon as there's a glitch, it calls out, so Dennis has got to go check it. Well, when he does that after hours, that's 2 hours for a 5-minute deal.
Isn't there like a battery backup? Because if the power goes out, then the alarm is supposed to go off. There must be some kind of power there or something, isn't there?
No, how that works is it's monitoring the current. And so if there's a momentary interruption in the current, that's what it's supposed to detect. When there is that momentary interruption, it detects it, and then it sends in a signal that says there's a momentary power outage.
But does it detect that, or does it just call out? I guess I need to get an understanding of the system, because right now we're paying every time Dennis goes out after hours. That's costing us, $40.
Yeah. Is there a loose connection where the wires are or something?
They come out and said there's no issues, but I guess I just a way of trying to avoid unnecessary costs, I guess, is what I'm looking at.
Well, too, do we need to, if it's just reporting a temporary outage and it's back online?
But that's my question.
Do we really?
When I get that phone call, or that's why I wish Dennis was here. But when he gets that phone call, does it tell you what it is, or is it just a phone call saying we had a interruption? You have no power. I don't know how that.
I talked to him about that Monday. I think it was, maybe it was Friday. But anyway, he says that they call him and tell him that the power went out momentarily, but it's back on again.
Okay. If it does that, then I think we should. There'd be no need for him to
worry about it. And I think that could be set up in the protocol with Floyd, and I'll talk to Bob about that. But if it's a momentary outage and comes right back on, just ignore it.
Okay.
Either that or put in you can put a time delay in there that the power has to be out for 15 seconds or 10 minutes or whatever.
That's what I was looking for, if we have something.
I'll check into that and get back to you.
Yeah, the power went off and came back on.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, that Dennis at the last meeting mentioned that the whole system locked up. And so when the whole system locks up, if there's an alarm condition, we won't know that. And as the system was before, when it was set up initially, it tested once a week. Now it's testing once a day. So if it doesn't get a test within 24 hours, somebody's going to come out here and find out why.
Jeremy, who's changed that name on that phone call?
Well, that would be the next thing I'd bring up is to, we have an issue. I guess my thing would be is we take Dennis off it, and then we just, however the listing currently is now by priority, we would just use that.
So, only thing you can do.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Then what order is that, Mr. Gray?
I believe it would be Mayor Maltz and then myself.
Yeah, I think it would. And if it's just something that it's locked up, show me where to unplug it and plug it back in.
Yeah.
I mean, so be it. I mean, if you're around, you're up in your shop.
Yeah.
Somebody can.
Yeah, that's fine.
Easily do that rather than call somebody out.
So the next thing, unless anybody has any other questions on any items, LMC, the loss control, the recommendation letter. I got a chance to talk to Pat Mingy with the League of Minnesota Cities. She heads up basically the sewer backup. And I did check with her. The things that we have done or have completed for which they requested is sufficient. They have provided us with the sewer backup insurance. There's two options to that sewer backup insurance. One part is with our insurance, we have sewer backup. So no matter what, we will always have that. But with just the sewer backup coverage versus the other part of it, which is no fault, just the plain part, which is sewer backup, they pay out if the city can prove it, basically if we were negligent. So there's coverage that way. And then additional coverage on top of that is this no fault, which basically they like to call it their good neighbor policy, which then allows you to not go through any legal proceedings or whatever. They just pay it. You have it. They don't question it. The claim gets paid. So we do have that. Just to point out to council, it was roughly about $1,200 for that coverage. So it isn't cheap, but yet you look at what we would have had to pay out if we didn't have that coverage.
Just an attorney fee
statement. Well, exactly. Yeah. The no fault is $285, I think, or something in that range. So I mean, when you think about it, like you said, it's only a few hours of attorney fees.
But it isn't even that. So it's your time.
Exactly.
So time,
that in itself pays for it.
Yeah.
But also with that sewer backup coverage, besides the no fault, that does also cover water main breaks. So if we were to have a water main, came in a tanker or Victoria, who had that? No, Chanhassen, sorry. Yeah, and Chanhassen had that big ordeal where it got in the news that time. Well, since they've had that, they do cover water backup. So if we have a water main break and that somehow gets into our sanitary and backs up, we're covered that way. I just wanted to add the one other thing. They're happy with the things we're doing with televising and maintaining the lines over the next 3 years with their contract with Empire. But the one thing they want us to do is put basically a game plan together, a maintenance plan, showing how often we're going to clean, repair, televise the lines. So we have to outline, you know, every 3 years we're going to clean, every five we're going to televise, every, you know, 30 we'll replace them or what. So they want this kind of laid out. I do have a sample policy, so I will work on getting something of that nature put together.
Jeremy, is this that group that gave us a list of 500 things that we had?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seems like all of a sudden they've done a 180 on their attitude.
Well, no, what it was is that if you remember that email we got, there were about 500 things on there,
yeah.
And there were about 50 of them that they wanted done in order to, you know, to provide the no-fault. And we did complete the majority of them, items that were in red.
I mean, it just sounds like they're pulling up their letters a little few of our courage or not.
Well, in talking with her, because I kind of expressed my concern that why we wouldn't get this coverage, because it's not like we haven't done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've been doing our fair share, and I explained to her that we just did a $1.1 million project on trying to correct these issues. And I said, we're not just doing it for insurance purposes. We have PCA that we need to keep happy. And I think with completing the things in red, that they're fine with the progress that we've made. So in talking to her, it didn't seem that the concept that we got from that letter, you know, our initial reactions of, really, we have to do all this, or how are we going to do all this? She says, no, they're there to help us.
And I think talking to somebody is a lot more personal.
I think so, too. Emails
back and forth. Yeah.
So I got a different, so if you could say, if you get a tone from an email,
well, yeah.
But, versus talking to someone, got a lot different tone than what we interpreted from that email.
Is there any kind of a deductible that the city would have to pay in?
$250. Yeah. So like if it was one, if we had a major rain event and there were 8 backups, it'd be $250. You know, per occurrence, per day, kind of, so to say. But if it's, you know, it happened on 3 different days, it would be $250 for each day. But, you know. So I just wanted to clarify that, let council know, so they know what's going on with that. So hopefully we just got to work on, you know, putting a plan together as far as maintenance of sanitary sewer lines. And that should hopefully resolve that issue.
And I think she liked the idea that we had a 3-year plan on the televising and the sewer.
Yeah, and then all the lines would be
right.
cleaned and televised.
Right. So that was a good plan we started then.
Mm-hmm.
So. Sanitary sewer system assessment.
Yeah, so that's all I have to report under Public Works and Utilities.
Jeremy, I got some stuff under there for pulling the
sure.
Last Friday, Dick stopped over by my place and asked me if I would look over the televising and sewer cleaning that's coming up, which I told him I'd do. But there's only one thing. I'm only going to be available between now and the 18th of September. So I'd like to get it done within the next 2.5 weeks. Dick was under the impression that they were going to do it next week.
That they were coming the 3rd.
And that's what I was too, but now I have a different story from Dennis this morning.
Yeah.
So I'll be in touch with them.
Yeah, I mean, so we can coordinate this.
Now, the water tower people are supposed to be here today or tomorrow. And we can do that jetting and televising as long as the water tower is on service.
Correct.
Because they'll be taking quite a bit of water. And to take it directly as when our pumps are, the tower will be out of service and our pumps will be running continuous to keep the water, and then we'll create a vacuum in there, and all of a sudden you're going to be starting to collapse some pipe if we start drawing a lot of water out of it.
So maybe it's good they'll be a couple of days behind.
Yeah. But I went over, Dennis and I went through it, we found all the manholes. There's one manhole, I don't know if Dennis got it dug out or not. It's in the back of Luke Panning's in Bergman's Cornfield. It's one that's been left low. It's about 2 feet low on purpose so they can farm over it. So that will have to be dug out before we start. And that's all. I had something else on the cleaning. Oh, and I had asked Jeremy to make up some flyers. I don't know if we could mail them.
Yeah, once I get a day, we probably could.
You know, so the rep, because this is going to be all in easements, where these guys are going to be walking around in people's backyards.
Yeah, so they know what's happening.
So.
We just thought it'd be a good common courtesy so people know what's going on.
And then one other thing, seeing they're working on the water tower, I've seen a city send out some letters, feelers, see if they could get some people in here to possible put some or lease space out on top of our tower. As long as the tower people are here, I think you should have them inspect that tower before we start committing to people that they can add structures on top of that structure.
And that's typically what they do, Larry, is that they have their own engineers and they come out and they do a survey or they inspect the tower to see if it will in fact support, you know, what you want to go up there.
We had an outfit inspected here 4 or 5 years ago, and he found some glitches that could be a liability to the city with the ladder and stuff like that.
I mean, I'd almost think I would recommend to the council that we would have, if we got to that point, that our engineer would inspect it, not just relying on the word of whoever is looking to do it.
Right.
I'd feel a lot more comfortable having our engineer
putting
the stamp on it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think it's the best policy for letting them people, if something would ever materialize with this, with letting them people utilize that pump house, because that's a public water system.
And that's not part of the agreement. Typically what they do, they put their own building in because they have to have their equipment air conditioned and all the equipment in there. That the fact that there's a building there is just a comment that there's a building on the property.
Okay. But I wouldn't let anybody see it. It's a public water system. But
I'll talk to you tomorrow, Jeremy, about it. Because I'm going to be leaving tomorrow afternoon.
All right. That'll work. I'll be here.
All right, Larry. All right, when Jeremy finds out when this is going to happen, you're going to need that dug up, that manhole.
Yeah.
And we're going to just have him go and get Brad, if he's available, to get that dug up. He's got 2 feet of dirt on top of it. Oh, no.
I don't even know where he is. I was back there looking the other day, and I don't know if Dennis located it or not. Maybe that could be on his to-do list tomorrow.
Probably a lot of, I have a feeling he's just going to work with the tower guys and he's going to be done tomorrow.
That's one other thing. I don't know if, what the city's going to do for replacement, but I would suspect it's going to take a minimum of 8 weeks if you're going to hire someone by the time.
Yep.
I don't know if you're going to try and get a hold of a person with sewer and water license or how you're going to do it. But in the meantime, between now and then, are you going to look at having one of these private contractors help out?
For water and sewer?
Yeah.
I got some information I'll be presenting to council.
Because it's getting the time of year where the ponds got to be monitored so they can be drained and...
Hydrants
gotta be flushed, but I know there's people service and there's a person out of Arlington also that does it. He was at a council meeting. That's when Mike was mayor.
What was his name?
Kurt Reeds.
Do we need his name?
Brian Reeds.
He
was here once.
Yeah.
Oh, Kurt Reeds.
So.
First of all, the last name, you know.
What?
Last spell his last name.
R-E-E-T-Z.
T-Z, okay.
I think it's Kurt. He was at a council meeting once, Jeremy, four or five, or when, maybe when Mike was mayor.
Yeah, I don't remember.
When we were looking at backup.
Privatizing our sewer and water system.
Yeah.
All right, a couple of choices there. So.
Right, yeah.
Okay. All right, thanks, Larry.
Brad?
Two things with the public works stuff. The brick, and it's cool, but how are you going to get it to match on this side of the brick and the other side of
the brick? Not going to match.
Yeah, but how close is it going to be, or is it going to be absolutely looking like it's two different?
The light's pretty close, but there's no dark.
It's just going to be pieced in.
It's going to be the fourth type brick up here. But yet, I guess it's council's wishes is if they want to
change it up. I hate to see it patched in and it looks so horrid.
Well, that's why he's going to try and hide it behind the bench there. You know what I mean? Where they make the cut. I don't know. What do you do? Redo the whole wall? Then we got to rebid it, and it ain't going to get done until next year.
If it shows and it's horrid, now you got to piecemeal more of it together. That's the only thing.
I've seen it,
and there's places that look absolutely horrid. You can see plain as day that they patched it. So other thing, can you let me know when the water tower is going down so I can let Norwood be now play on those? So.
Yep. If they're here tomorrow, if they're here tomorrow,
we've been down on calls, and it'll probably happen when the water
tower is there. Right. Is that water tower, because Dennis had told me that was supposed to start next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow. Have you got updated information?
I talked to them today, and they were supposed to come Sunday. be here Sunday and do it.
He told me that it's supposed to be here today.
And then they called him and said, no, can't make it Sunday, and yada, 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 and keeps getting moved the day over. Mm-hmm. Now he told me today, tomorrow.
You have one thing yet?
Yeah, I didn't get here for the public comment part, if I can bring it up. I'm looking at putting a couple eagles in the park between the evergreen and the garbage cans on both sides. Fire department's going to put some money toward one of them. I can pay for one of them out of the fund we have, but the fund is getting, I got $1,700 or $1,800 in the memorial fund, but I've got to put 10 names on that granite piece yet, sandblast them in there. The people that did them last time were at $250 a ladder. Now they want between $4 and $5 a ladder. So the people I gave $100 to get their name on there now is costing $160 to $180. So with that, I need $1,800 to put that together, so the funds are down. But I talked to John Truckee over the weekend, and he thinks we can get it for $700 or $800. So there'd be enough to pay for one statue. And I know that the city has some park funds. Is there any chance you could pay for half of one of these and the fire department the other half and put two of them in there? I don't know where you are with park fund money, but I know there's something in there. Maybe you got it earmarked already, but.
So are you looking for $100 and some?
$400. Fire department. Instead of put money towards it last night. I'm sure they'd pay the whole thing, but I just, we got other things we need too, so.
Yeah, this, barring any major issues, I mean, the park's winding down. There's $200 or $2,000 left in the parks fund.
When that means for 2 days, I go down and pick them up right away, or I told them to be, but when not coming, they're going to sell those and get others, but make others.
Your wishes?
They are 44 inches tall and 550 pounds a piece.
They're not going to fly away?
No.
And I like that idea because it's going to take more than, unless they have really strong people, more than just a couple of people that pick them up.
Gonna need a motion.
I mean, even wait if you want to think about it till now, I just wanted to get it brought up so it's in the figure out next meeting or something.
Okay. Can be brought up next meeting, or else a motion now.
What's the council wish?
Let's get it done with. I'll make a motion and go for it.
Motion been made.
Up to
$500, is that what you want to say?
$400.
Motion been made. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Second. Motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Anything else, Brad? No. Larry?
No.
No.
Thanks, fellas.
Yep.
Resignation of city employee Dennis Byerly.
As council is aware, August 14th, Mr. Byerly gave his 2-week notice. His last day will be August 28th. City council held a special meeting to accept his resignation. In the meantime, I have received other various comments as to his resignation, and I feel if anybody wants to address anything concerning his resignation, it should be done at this time. Kelly Dome with Melkert, Hubert, Sodine Law Office is here also to answer any questions or concerns we may have on the resignation of Mr. Byerly.
Were there some issues? I mean, that she's present tonight to clarify anything, or?
So my biggest concern would be email I received from Mr. Odoms that I forwarded to the council.
Any more comments on that email?
Yeah. I know Mr. Odoms voiced his concern about not being present at the meeting. Some of the other things was other items in that email. I guess if there's anything that needs to be brought up or addressed, it should be done now. Or as far as I'm concerned, after tonight, City of Hamburg needs to move forward. He needs to accept his resignation. He needs to work towards hiring someone to fill his position.
There was attempts that night to get everybody together. Apparently, Dick wasn't available.
Right, and let me address that. Number one, I did send an email. I had obviously concerns then. I have concerns now. Kelly called me last Monday, and we talked for almost an hour and a half. I've had two conversations on the phone with Jeremy, one conversation in person. I've had at least two in-person conversations with Dennis and one telephone conversation with him. So before I make any judgment of what I'm going to publicly say about this, I guess I've got some questions. Is number one, it seems to me that this meeting was called, and it didn't necessarily have to be called that night. Now, Dennis, as I understand it, told Jeremy that he was resigning on that Wednesday. But Jeremy says, well, to make it official, you have to give us a piece of paper. That piece of paper was not received until Wednesday. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thursday?
Wednesday morning.
So we called an emergency meeting based on something that he said. Well, I don't know if Dennis has threatened to quit in the past or not.
He put it
meeting,
right.
The meeting was after writing Thursday morning. We had a meeting Thursday night.
No, when?
Wednesday.
Wednesday morning he came in to me. He came into my office at 8:30. Said, you got my 2 weeks' notice. I said, if you're serious, I need it in writing. I then called the mayor, explained to the mayor what had happened. We discussed, give him some time.
Mm-hmm.
When I came into work Thursday morning, I had a written notice. I felt we needed to take action. So I called the mayor. He felt a meeting needed to be called. So he addressed that with another council member. So we had two members that felt an emergency meeting needed to be called. So we moved forward on holding an emergency meeting because we felt we needed to address the issue.
But that meeting was on Wednesday?
Thursday evening.
And I did make attempts to notify you, Mr. Odoms, by phone, by email. Check your phone records. Called you at least two times. Sent emails trying to get everybody here. Would it have been nice to have everybody here? Yes. But do I feel that meeting need to be held? Yes, because we can't wait till the next council meeting and say, oh, by the way, Dennis resigned, his last day's tomorrow. That puts us in a bigger hole.
And I understand that, but why couldn't that have been held on Saturday, for instance? I don't see...
I guess my weekends are valuable, if you want my opinion.
I'm going to say, I'm not coming into a meeting on a Saturday.
Well, I think when it comes to, you know, city business as serious as that, I think you have to...
That's why we had it Thursday.
That's your priority. But I guess the other thing is that, you know, in talking to Dennis, nobody from the council has gone up to him and said, why? And I think that, you know, why all of a sudden would... And again, I don't know that he's telling me that none of the council members have gone up and talked to him.
I've talked to him probably that Wednesday or Thursday night.
Okay. And did he tell you why?
Yeah.
Okay, because he has told me why, too. And so, quite honestly, I hate to see Dennis go. He's been here for 20 years. He's done what I consider to be a decent job for, you know, being one person kind of running the whole show. He's you know, really been dependable. He's had some performance issues, and I understand that. But I just, he kind of indicated to me, and he may be talking out of both sides of his mouth, I don't know. But he indicated to me that not one council member came to him and talked to him and says, geez, what's going on? Is there something, you know, something we can do? he outlined to me pretty much why he's leaving, and it was pretty evident to me that there was no chance of trying to convince him to change his mind. I'm not sure that the council really wanted him to change his mind. Maybe this is the time that he should go. But I just when somebody leaves after 20 years and just leaves abruptly, I don't know why that's not, you know, looked at and addressed. So if for no other reason that it doesn't happen again 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 years down the road.
People quit. It was his decision. It's not my decision. It's not my place to go and say, hey, what's the problem? Come back to work. That's the way I see it.
Well, and
I mean, why do I have to talk him into coming back to work if he wants to quit? He made the decision. We accepted his resignation.
Yeah.
I mean, to actually go back there and say, you know, we really need you, Dennis. You've been here 20 years. You should come back. I mean, that's ridiculous in my opinion.
Well, but look what the city is going to have to face in the coming months.
That's life.
That's
people quit all the time and moved on to other jobs and other careers.
I think the city should have at least made the effort to go to them and say, is there a problem? Can we sit down and maybe talk this out? Not say, please don't turn in resignation, but just, you know, we're interested. Is there something here that we should know?
Dick, Jeremy has talked to me about this issue, and he's talked to Dennis and tried to see what was wrong, and he's talked to Dennis, say, is there something we can do, or, you know, to get, you know, and he made his decision, huh? And there's no...
Yeah, thing. And I understand that, Stephen, and I hate to see him go, I think we all probably realize what the impact is going to be of that happening, and so I just thought, again, if somebody's talked to him and he told me that they did, I can't deal with that. But I would have thought that somebody would just go and say, you know, let's sit down, let's talk. What are your issues? And it took some talking with him, but you know, he basically told me what his issues are, and it's not appropriate for me to take and repeat what those issues are, because if he wanted the council to know, he would tell the council.
Right.
And I guess I'd have to agree with Jeremy that, you know, let's turn the page on this thing. But I think the fact that that meeting could have been held, you know, probably when all of us were available, and even Jeremy had said that he thought that that should have been a full council decision.
Exactly.
And Kelly also, when I spoke with her, she said that probably should have been. But the reason I understand that the meeting was held as an emergency meeting is so that they would accept, so that the council would accept his resignation. You know.
And, you know, as for every one of us going and talking to him, maybe he didn't want to talk to a couple of us. I know that Jeremy has talked to him, and Mayor Maltz has talked to him. And Jeremy is his boss.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy's got to report to us. And yeah, I didn't see no further.
When I talked to him, I told him that. I said, you know, it's kind of awkward for the council to just come up.
Yeah.
You know, when you gave us the ultimatum, you're quitting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had numerous people quit in the business I was before. You know, they're grown-ups. They made their decision. You know, I'm not going to beg. You know, if it comes to that, then they've got you all the time.
Has he ever threatened to quit before, Jeremy?
Yeah.
I'm sure he said it.
No.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure we've all said it.
I didn't hear what did you say?
Well, I asked if he ever threatened to quit before.
Oh, okay.
I guess I don't. I've known Dennis for a long time, and I didn't feel the obligation to go up and inquire into further reasons why. It's a personal decision I left it as, and I respected his decision to make his call to say, you know what, I've had enough, whatever reason it may be, I don't care. You know, and that's his decision, and I didn't feel like I needed to go and add my 2 cents in the equation. He put his notice in, and we move on.
I agree with Mr. Lund. I mean, I feel it's not my business. He quit. He wanted to quit. I don't really care what his reasons are. If he wants to tell me his reasons, fine, but I'm not going to seek him out and actually drag them out of it. That's not my place. It's not my business. I really don't care. If he doesn't want to work for the city anymore, then that's his business. If I don't want to work for my employer, I'm going to say I quit. I'm not a contractual employee, and neither is he. It's called an at-will employment. If he wants to leave, he can leave.
Bob, I think you have an obligation. I think we all have an
obligation. Why do I have an obligation?
Let me finish. I think we all have an obligation to look out for the welfare of all the people that work here, both of you, all three of you. And I think we can't just say, well, okay, if Jeremy says tomorrow, I'm all done. Okay, well, I think we'd probably go to Jeremy and say, well, wait a minute, is there something we should talk about? If Sue all of a sudden says, I'm done, you know, we just say, okay, just give us your resignation and we'll go from there. I think we have an obligation to show an interest. If there's something going on that we don't know about, I think we have to know about that. Secondly, if they want to go, there's no way we should stand in their way. I understand that, but I think we have the obligation. If Jeremy just turns in his resignation tomorrow morning, are we just going to say, okay, we'll have an emergency meeting and accept Jeremy's resignation? I think we'd have to talk to Jeremy and say, Jeremy, what's going on?
If I put something in writing, I'm done.
Yeah. I understand that.
That's how I took from Dennis. He actually put it in writing this time, so I felt he's serious. So I got to take the issue serious.
But don't
and,
you think
and I did talk to him. I asked him, is this really your will?
Uh-huh.
And he said, yes. Well, what am I supposed to do? Go beg him to come back?
Yeah, I mean, that's why that extra day, that was just like to cool it off.
Right, that's why we gave him the day to cool off.
So
it's not like we didn't do nothing. And I called him when I got the written letter before I took even that serious. I asked him if this was his will. Yep. And if a person says yes, I'm not one to argue or meddle in someone else's business.
But exactly. I'm not obligated to go into his business. If Jerry wants to quit tomorrow, then that's Jeremy's business.
But
that's the way he feels. That's what he wants to do. If Sue wants to quit tomorrow, that's fine. That's up to her. It's not my business. They're at-will employees.
And that's fine, but I still think as a council, we have an obligation to show a little compassion and a little interest. I mean, if Sue said tomorrow she's quitting, would you ask her why? Would you talk to her?
It's not my business.
Would you try to, see if there's an issue that we can
say the same thing.
If Jeremy would, yes, Jeremy's your boss. The council isn't.
Yeah. I think Bob would be right. He'd have to say no. It's not his business. But as Jeremy, as her boss, he would ask her just like he did to Dennis and say, "Give me a reason, And if it's a good enough reason and they put it in writing, we're going to have to put this to bed to rest.
Wouldn't the council want to know why Sue all of a sudden just decided to up and leave?
I think I would. Okay, we're talking about me quitting. Okay, if I was going to quit before I put it in writing, I would probably sit here before council and lay it all on the line, say, this is what's going on. This is why I quit. I came to you. If I don't want to tell you, I'll just tell everybody else, But
that's her choice.
Right. My choice. I would lay it out online. And then if you would say, well, let's see if we can try and fix this. Well, let's see, because you're a valued employee, so, maybe we can do something. So, whatever, whichever way it would go. But if I still wanted to, then I would put it in writing and
Sue, you're absolutely correct. However, the thing is, people are different. You may respond that way, other people may not. I think they should know that we're willing to listen, and I don't think that message is given to them.
I don't think Dennis wanted us to listen.
You're correct. He may not. I think he had his mind made up from the moment that he had told Jeremy he was quitting. But I still think just. As elected officials representing the people in our city, I think we have to show that we are compassionate. We're not hard-boiled and hard-hearted. Yes,
ma'am. We have been compassionate. I mean, when it comes to filling out these water reports and everything else, the city has been compassionate.
I understand
in a different
sense.
I
understand that.
I think this has really got overly blown out of proportion. I mean, I don't think we did anything wrong. Any advice from?
Well, I was just going to chime in. If the city would have wanted to have required Dennis to provide information about reasons, we have a Data Practices Act, and you would have to give him a Tennyson warning, and you would have, I mean, so if someone comes to talk to you voluntarily because you're municipal employees, then you don't give someone a ton of warning because it's just a voluntary type thing. So if you would have come to the council and wanted, you know, ahead of time or something, wanted to explain things, and you wouldn't have asked him to, but he on his own free will would have done that, we wouldn't have had to worry about the Data Practices Act. However, if there's council members that are going and talking and asking questions, my concern as your city attorney is that that needs to be controlled because we have to give him a Tennyson advisory warning that we're asking for private data, it's not public, and that, you know, I mean, he has the right to not answer those questions because we're asking for private data.
In other words, we're diving into his...
Well, and if we want to compel him to answer questions, we have to go beyond that and give what's called a Garrity warning. And so, because you guys are municipal employees, if we are asking you, I'm just thinking you have to think about that a little bit because it's like doing an investigative interview or something with an employee. You know, no, and even you guys as council members have data privacy rights. So because we're a, you know, government entity, it's not just the same as going up if you're in your private business and just going up and asking someone questions because Dennis has got rights. And he would need, so that's, I mean, that's just something I'm just hearing here that just concerns me a little bit here about that process.
But, okay.
Does that make sense?
The city themselves did not go prying.
No, we didn't. And there's not, we don't have to go prying.
Yeah.
But if we would have gone prying,
then we would
have had to have given it Tennyson warning, okay. And I'm sure Jeremy would have been talking to me about that. Yeah. And I have that drafted for the application of, because I put a bunch of stuff together for the new, to advertise the position or whatever, what you guys need for a packet to do that. So that's one of the things that you have to give your job applicants. You have to advise them of their Tennyson warning rights and say, you know, when you're filling out this application, when you're signing this stuff, be aware, because if you're considered a finalist, now the public, the paper, can come find out who you are and that you've applied. And so a lot of times those issues come with people applying for public employee jobs because they don't want their private, they don't want someone else, even while it's public or private, to know that they're applying that for your city.
Right.
So, you know, we have to advise people of the rights. And so I think that's where it gets a little bit more complicated when you're in a city than if you're in a private business. You know what I mean? So we have more things we have to think about. Now, I'm not saying you guys have done anything wrong. I'm just saying that would be the fact that you didn't do that is your good instinct to not just go talking to your employees without having that consensus among all of you and then doing it the right way.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. And I mean, there's nothing wrong if you guys would decide you want to talk to someone. You can, you're the council, you can make that decision. I just would want to make sure that the city's complying with, because you wouldn't want someone suing you for violating their data privacy rights. Am I scaring you enough to at least think about what you're doing? That's my job. Think about these laws. Because there are so many laws with public entities that do not apply to the private sector. So.
And that's part of the reason why I asked Kelly here, because it is different from the private sector.
Yeah.
And also, just I wanted to just address the council. Is you have to remember, Dennis has been here 20 years. I've been here 17. We have not gone, the city has not gone through this a lot.
Yeah.
So
right.
The council or myself is not familiar with all the rules and regulations that come with hiring, you know, firing and hiring.
Right.
So that's why I've asked, you know, Kelly to be here and have her guide me through this so we don't incur any possible lawsuits.
Like even just for criminal background checks, you know, because you want to do certain checks before you have a new person come in, but there's a law that says for public entities that you can't just do that criminal background check on every applicant. You have to wait till you interview them or you're making a conditional job offer. That law has now changed for private businesses as of January 1st, 2014. Both the private and the public sector are going to be the same. And that's going to be the first time in the history of our state. But like on job applications where there's a box, have you ever been convicted, you know, of a of a felony or so or whatever, that you can't have that anymore. So, you know, so I revised the job application and I actually brought that with me.
That's just for the state, correct?
That's for the state, yeah. The state.
Say, if you're applying somewhere online in a different state, they can ask anything they want.
Well, I don't know. I'm only licensed in Minnesota.
Yeah, it depends on
it's all totally state dependent. But it is a huge deal, you guys, that in our state now, as of January 1st, 2014, every employer cannot make those blanket requests anymore. I mean, you can't do it. It's not lawful. So, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things, like with online screening, checking Facebook, doing all of these things. I mean, you guys as council members cannot be just out there Googling people that may be applying. We need to have a form signed that will release you guys from liability for, and just have one person do it, Jeremy or whoever's going to do it. But I would not advise that each council member be doing that, because if you realize it's your own home, if you're doing stuff on that computer and it involves the city, it's city data. I mean, when you're, you know what I'm saying? You got to be careful what you're doing. So I think in this whole process, we just need to have some checks and balances in there. And I've been helping Jeremy with that, but I put a packet of stuff together so I can give that to Jeremy. But then also, if you don't do the background check and you can find something out on someone, because now it's really easy to just, like at my law firm, we have this database Accurant, and I can plug in anyone's name and within about 8 seconds come up with the entire history of that person, any public record in the entire United States of America. I mean, just, any judgments, liens, criminal records, you know, all of this stuff is now available, and it's really cheap to do it. It's like $8 or $10, so you don't have to rely on someone telling you what counties they've lived in, and then go find out what their criminal background check thing requires, and send it to each state, and then if someone lies to you, you can't find out that they've been convicted, and we used to have all those issues. Now, people really can't hide behind their criminal records anymore, because it's all in a database system.
Yeah, and the state's got a database, too, that is free, that I can go on there and I can get any information about you that I want, any civil or criminal information, or anybody else in this room that matter.
So that is
really mushroom job. Recently, a lot of people use that.
Yes. So we've got different processes in place, you know, for advertising and for having this person come in. We have the veterans preference law that we have to comply with. So I've got that form, and then the points assigned and all of that kind of stuff. So you guys are familiar with those laws and all of that. But I think where I see employers getting in trouble more is with the whole internet and people just off doing stuff and not realizing that you're creating data for the city, you know, when you're sitting at your house. So I would caution just anything you're doing for the city, realizing that you are creating data, that if someone would do a Data Practices Act request on one of your employees and there's data, that's data that's out there that has now been created when you're doing emails about people, each other or employees or however you're doing things. So, I don't know how much you guys understand about all of that, probably a lot. But a lot of times I think council members maybe don't understand the significance of what their emails may be or Googling information, those kinds of things.
Is there anything else on this subject for Dennis Bartley that we're all...
Well, there's numerous things I got.
Okay.
Because, unless anybody else has anything else to say on the resignation, I think now we need to move forward.
Yeah, it should be over.
So one thing I think we need to do is possibly look at hiring someone part-time, just for the interim. Make that clear that it's interim. And if we hire someone part-time, then I think what we should do is have Kelly run at least a background check on them.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to do, and I have all that stuff already drafted, so if we're going to do that, I do think, you know, we do need to have them sign something so that you can do a Google search just the basic stuff, you know, not too invasive. But if they've also worked at a different city or something, or you know, you can get information from other public entities by doing a Data Practices Act request, and so you can do that. And then you can also have them sign a release for references information from a private business. And that's a huge thing, you guys, because if people won't sign this stuff, that's a big red flag. You know, if they don't want you calling and they don't want you knowing stuff about them, probably don't want to hire them. But another thing, I don't think we've talked about this, but is the federal DOT laws. So this is subject to drug and alcohol testing and federal DOT laws, right? So you can't really have anyone start this position until they're tested. Do you guys do random testing?
We don't.
Okay.
Because we don't have.
Or do you have anything over 21,000 pounds?
See, and that's what it was. Is I don't think we've ever required a commercial license.
Oh,
so we haven't required it.
No, there's nothing over 20. Oh, is it 20? 21 or 26,000?
It's 26,000.
26 something.
26.
Oh, it is.
26,000 is CDL.
Okay,
yeah.
26,000.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
you don't have to do
nothing.
That.
Yeah.
Okay,
we don't need anything with the CDL.
I still suggest the state of Minnesota, you can have a drug and alcohol testing policy, and you can test applicants underneath that as well, even if it's not a CDL person. I still would suggest that because of what this person's going to be doing, that you do that.
Yeah, I agree,
you know,
there.
I mean, they're going to be driving, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And right. So, and also driver's license and all of that kind of stuff. You want to make sure that they have a valid.
Because I think maybe a first step here is probably should set up a personnel committee.
Yeah.
I think Chris and Steve have kind of sat on that before.
Okay.
But I think maybe we should have something more of a, not just for each time something comes up, but just have an actual personnel committee. So if there's any issues, they're kind of the go-to people too.
And I think almost every city I represent does have a personnel committee, so I think that's a good idea. I mean, I would advise you guys to do that.
So that'd be my first step. The other thing to think of is we talked about salary range and benefits to make sure for pay equity.
Yes.
So I went back and looked at pay equity, and there's no range, you know, when we did pay equity.
Wow. Okay.
Because we've never had no set range.
Okay.
No pay scales or nothing of that nature. So my concern would be is just, you know, to make sure when we set a range for hiring someone that, you know, we are within the Pay Equity Act.
Yeah, and I can help you guys with that.
How much was Dennis getting paid in
the start? I believe, hold on.
Roughly.
$20.48 an hour. So that's some of the things
I
got.
Calculator, yeah.
So but about $44,000 a year, roughly, right
yeah.
on there.
And typically with overtime, you need about $45,000 okay. something a year.
So in the interim, Jeremy, you were talking about having people service?
Yeah, and what we're talking about, people service, that'd just be for water and sewer. my concerns right now, to keep the city afloat. I mean, any maintenance, repair, major type things that need to be addressed, we'll just have to contract out.
Yeah, that's not a problem. I mean, as long as, you know, you're not, as long as you can get out of the contract.
Right.
Just want to make sure that you're
right.
not doing something for your, you know, I mean, notice provisions are huge.
Right.
And you also want to be a named insured on whatever policy that contractor has.
And then, like with water and sewer, I checked around, but most cities are working with other cities. They're paying $50 an hour for this, you know, borrowing. People services charges $50 an hour during working hours, set working hours. And they're $75 an hour outside work hours. So they're very comparable as to what other cities are paying other cities to help them aid in their distribution systems. Right now, one of the things I looked at, Dennis averages about 60 hours a month for water and sewer. Looking through January through July, that's what he's averaging. I figure at least 6 to 8 of those hours is reading meters, which I think we can hire someone a lot cheaper to do. You got 2 hours of rounds each weekend, so that's another 8 to 9 hours a month. So there's almost 20 of those hours that can be hired out quite cheaply. You need a minimum of 2 hours a week for water and 1 hour a week for sewer to meet license requirements. So one of the things I think the council needs to decide on here quite quickly is what they would like to look at contracting at hour-wise with People Services or someone separately. I guess I'm more comfortable with People Services just because they're a company that specializes in this. Everything's covered. They have insurance. We have all that. We don't have to work out much other than a contract with them versus hiring someone, putting a contract together. You got insurance, liability, all them other things you need to iron out, but you know, I'm open to suggestions on that.
The 2 hours, Jeremy, on Saturdays and Sundays, is that, I mean, it reads meters, obviously, right? Is that something that's required every day?
It should be monitored every day, yes. And my thought on that is, in the meantime, I can manage and take care of that to save the city money. I don't have a problem doing that, as long as I'm able to take the 2 hours and comp them and use them when I'd like at a later time.
But did you say you're not licensed to do the water plant?
I am licensed for sewer.
Okay, so how does a water plant, does that have to be ready every day too then?
Yeah, there's sampling that has to be done each day.
And so are you qualified to do that?
No.
So we have to get some...
So for sure water has to be. And I, as well as you're doing water, I'd recommend doing sewer too, because when we get into the discharging and all that, that is very time consuming. Yeah. Because there's the reporting I can do, but the field work, I haven't done in years, I'll be honest with you. So as far as some of the sampling and testing would be outside my reach, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I can do the reporting. I've been doing that for you. Well, I have been doing the reporting, to be honest. Anyways, so.
So people serve would have to be here every day?
Yeah, because you have to test the water each day. Make sure you're within certain levels.
So that'd be $50 a day.
At least for 1 hour. Yeah. But I mean, when they're taking rounds around other towns, they just spin in and take samples, and it probably wouldn't even take them long, would it?
Oh, yeah. Well, could they do it in 1 hour per day?
I get it.
Yeah, per day, yes.
Yeah.
Well, they could read the meters and stuff too at that same visit.
Yeah. And then I thought on weekends to save money, you know, as long as the council will be willing to give me them 2 hours, I'll do it to comp them.
But that's not going to solve the well water problem, right?
Well, no, but at least...
I mean, could we buy... Wait, what I'm saying
is... It's an extra $400 a month that the city's saving.
Uh-huh. Okay.
By me just coming in and reading. Obviously, there's something wrong. Yeah, there's going to be an additional cost.
But I mean, you would come in and do the water, the sewer, but would they come in on those same days and do the water plant?
I can do the water on the weekends, because all we do on the weekends is monitor the readings and make sure the plant's operational.
Oh, see, I thought you said you can't do that.
It basically, it's just writing numbers. You're reading the numbers.
Yes, okay. On the weekends. But during the week, you probably should be sampling each day.
Okay, all right.
So I've looked at that. Some of the other things I've looked at is I'm trying to cover the things that take the most time. The other thing is cleaning. Park rentals are pretty well done. I think we can get away. We don't have to worry about park rentals. The only thing would be is that somebody would need to winterize the park. So that's a concern of mine. Other things, there's cleaning this building and the hall. We have about 6 weddings in the next 8 weeks. So the hall needs to be clean. Some things I thought about, either that's something you can have the part-time person do. I believe it takes 6 hours to clean that hall. At least that's what it took Dennis. I don't know if someone else, it would be more. Part-time person doing that, you know, contracting out a service, but I think you're going to pay around $20 an hour.
And we were doing that before.
Yeah. And I believe, if Sue, maybe you want to chime in, but Sue says she'd be willing to pick up some extra hours. I don't know, would you do that at your hourly rate?
I would be willing to do it at my hourly rate.
To do the cleaning?
Of the hall and here?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's an option.
Because basically it's once a week.
Then the other concerns is mowing and reading the meters. Probably takes a good day to read all the meters in town. And mowing, that's probably, well, now it's down because it's dry.
Yeah.
But that, you know, typically that can be almost half the work week. So them are my concerns that I feel have to be covered.
As for reading meters, you don't need no college education to do that.
No.
Just get the numbers
right. Point the gun, read it, write it down.
And it's, reread if I think so something's wrong. I'll
not rocket science, reading the meters. It's just a time-consuming
thing.
Well,
I've got a candidate that will probably handle both of those jobs.
So I think the real things, depending what you want to do with cleaning, mowing, and other various part-time things, as in reading the meters or other little type items, because like I said, if we have to replace a water meter, we'll just have to call up a plumber and have them do it. We'll have to pay that, you know, that extra cost. I mean, I don't know what other.
It isn't that often.
No, it isn't.
I'm just saying
we get in a pinch, you know, we look at hiring plumber or somebody licensed and bonded to do these things so they're done properly.
Well, somebody would be nice if we have any kind of a plumbing issue that we'd have like a company or a private that is licensed as a plumber to kind of, what do you want to say, be like on retainer, you know, that he'd be the go-to person and that they would know if there is a city emergency, we need you.
Yeah. Because when you break it down and I looked at half of Dennis's days right now taking care of water and sewer, which we could cover with people's services, mowing, and cleaning. In some weeks, that's dang near his whole week.
You said you had somebody for mowing that she's on, and cleaning would be...
If she wants to, we got a lot of it covered.
Now, would there be any issue with sewer reading the meters, too? I mean, that way, that might eliminate some of the issues with when you say you see something that's out of whack. I mean, you're going to know.
I won't know until
I won't know until you plug it in. Because you're not going to remember the last reading.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, I'm very impressed.
unless you take the sheet with
well, the last sheet,
the last reading, right. And you put the new reading on right next
you
to it.
You could.
I'm trying to get that. Yeah, that would be.
Then you might be doubling your time. I don't know. If Sue's willing to do that, or I have time, I'm willing to, you know, like I said, I'm willing to step in. Like I said, I don't want to be beat down and doing 60 hours, you know, a week. But I'm willing to step up and do some things so we can get through these.
Well, if we can get somebody part-time, I mean...
Do some odds. And I'd say if we're going to do part-time, what I'd probably look at someone that able to run that X marks more.
Yeah.
So that, and they just, I don't know, handy skills, a handyman.
Know how to... Use a sprayer, spray some weeds, pick up.
Simple thing.
Just basic.
Anybody can walk around and read them meters, and anybody can dictate.
So, for part-time, I mean,
think you're fine, you guys. If you have someone in mind or you have ways to fill that, that's fine. But I think we still need to do the background checks and those kinds of things before you let anyone start.
Which they'd have to sign that form or...
Yeah, so we can do all that stuff. And it's not a big deal. It's just I would advise the city to do that.
And then you have, do you, Kelly, have something written up that basically states that they could sign off that so they know it's an interim, right?
Yes, we would do that.
You know, and I think we would do that too, so that we have something paper on file.
Yeah.
So they know that.
They would know.
So they can't come back and say, hey, wait a minute, you promised me a part-time job.
Right, because then we're going to be having an advertisement out there for this position so that person would know that they're not being hired, you know, as a full-time.
No, but, you know, even if they had somebody's qualifications and were willing to get these water and sewer licenses, there's nothing saying they can't apply for it.
Right. They could certainly apply for it, but we would want to do that public advertisement for that position.
Right, which it is going in the paper.
Yeah, well, Kelly's going
to
get me
update
tomorrow.
Yeah, and that looks great. I was thinking what we need to add to that is the equal employment opportunity.
Okay, So you'll send me that in the morning.
Yep.
I will get that out to council. Any comments from council on it, let me know. Deadline's Friday because of the holiday weekend.
Yeah.
So do you have any fear that maybe we're going to have to find somebody relatively quickly?
I think you're going to be overwhelmed by applications. That's my gut.
You're going to be overwhelmed by applications, but whether they're going to be qualified resumes is going to be the problem.
And that's always the ultimate question.
Yeah. That's where the weeding starts. You know, weed them out.
And so that's where we have this personnel committee. That
kind of, and then the initial thing would be, you know, assigning points just to the qualifications so that we're doing under the Veterans Preference Act. You know, if someone
and I've started putting that together.
Yeah, then we would immediately send out rejection letters to those people and I've got that stuff drafted. You know, and then
so there'll be a minimum of like, you know, 20 points for this, 20 points for that. Did they meet the minimum 40 points?
Yeah.
Nope.
Then
they're done.
They're done.
We don't even look at it any
further.
Do they
have an appeal process for whatever reason? Or
no, we're following the law by doing the 100-point veteran system.
Right. I mean, as long as you need to keep the applications, you need to keep how you're doing the ratings so someone would ever challenge it, you'd be able to say, here's, you know, we did this in accordance with the law. It was in a non-discriminatory fashion. We're not discriminating against them on the basis of race, religion, veterans, you know, all of those things. I mean, you have to, particularly with the veterans issue, if you have a veteran that applies and they're getting points, I mean, you know, you have to comply with that law.
Well, and most companies use a software nowadays to scan a resume. About 95% of them don't even actually see human eyes. Was that an option here or not? Or is it because it's a government entity type thing? Because like I said, I know that like 95% of resumes don't even get seen by HR managers because they go through the scanning software and if the keywords aren't there, they just get pitched or they get filed, as you said, for a year or however long they actually keep them in their database and that's it.
Mm-hmm. To purchase the software, I wouldn't advise things to try to invest in anything like that.
No,
I mean, you've only got three employees, or, you know, you've got the minimum qualifications of what you need for this job, and I think you're going to be able to look at those resumes and what they fill out on the job application and make a determination pretty quickly if that's someone that you should interview or not.
And I guess, I don't know, it's up to council, but I feel comfortable if Steve and Chris were willing to sit on that committee again because we went through it already, kind of the basis with when we were looking at part-time and then decided not to. I'm open to any two, but I'm just saying they have sat on it before when we were looking at it, gone through the process, so they'd be most familiar with what we'll be dealing with here.
I'd be willing. Comfortable, I'll have no problem.
Unless anyone else is, you know, looking.
I guess that makes sense if they've done it and they're familiar.
Right, they went through it when we did upgraded, when we went through the job descriptions and that process. So,
just know if they're willing, that's fine. Yeah.
So, you think we should have a motion on that set up personnel committee appointing Councilmember Lund and Councilmember Trevish?
I move that we appoint Councilmember Trevish and Councilman Lund, for the hiring committee for the new city employee.
I would second that.
Well, a motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Steve and I would have to abstain, right? Or no?
No.
Okay.
So you said the hiring committee, do you mean personnel committee, though? Do you want it just...
Personnel committee.
Because you said hiring committee.
Yeah, I think you...
Okay, personnel committee, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I know it's semantics. It just kind of came out wrong.
I know. This is what you get when you have an attorney.
I was just going to bring it up, too, though, that we'd have it for personnel committee. So it'll be for...
I was just going to
put it motion.
Yeah. You want to amend your motion?
Amend my motion to make it the personnel committee, not hiring committee.
I'll second his amendment.
There we go.
Okay.
I have to remember that you got tape recording. So.
Bob made the motion. Dick seconded.
Okay.
On both.
Okay.
Yes.
The original and the amended.
So I guess my thing is we don't meet again till September 10th.
I thought we were meeting on the 4th.
That's the budget. Council, but I guess if people have someone in mind for this part-time position, we need to get the ball rolling on that. I don't know if we want to throw that out now, or, you know, if people have some recommendations.
I just have to make the call, and they'll come and fill out the paperwork.
But we probably would have to formally accept that.
Only the council can hire. So if someone filled it out, you would need to make a conditional job offer for that part-time position contingent on passing the background check. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You would actually need to convene to hire that person.
Well, Kelly and Jeremy, you're going to, with the application, that would probably be the best, I would imagine,
yep,
to get it coming out. And then the person can come and apply,
yep,
and that would be the best, not necessarily the fastest, but the best, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. So if there's a call or something you wanted to make, I can get that stuff to you tomorrow morning.
Yeah. And then I can have them do that, and then maybe we should have two council members call a special meeting.
Yeah, you would need two.
And then accept that.
Then you'd have
so that way we can get them.
Yep.
Going, because I hate to wait 2 weeks here. And
yeah.
Well, and we could call that special meeting prior to the budget workshop.
And that was my thought. We're on the same page on that, definitely. Yes, that would be my plan then.
And I would advise you guys at that meeting that you'd also have the people service. And I mean, if there's anything else you guys need to try to all of that at one time.
Yep.
Well, that friend that you got, Mayor, that could do the meters and what else he could do.
Lawn, the trimming, all
that. Yeah, I mean, that'd be another. I mean, we have to go through the same process for him, right? So, I mean, if we could have both of them here and work on it at the same meeting and get them both hired.
Dick, this would be like a handyman, too. He'd be here every day, I mean, or whenever
he
you
could,
want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or okay.
Or
reset.
Yeah.
And it's not uncommon when the city has a maintenance worker or a public works or someone quit that, you know, you do make arrangements.
Yeah, city has to run.
You have to, because you still have to run the city, so, you know, I mean,
right,
you are acting appropriately.
Okay, good. Okay. So then I guess we probably have to agree on, you know, obviously there'd probably be no benefits in that, but on an hourly rate for that part-time help.
Yeah.
And then also something to think about is we got to think about looking at salary range and benefits
for the full new hire. For the new hire, yeah.
Yeah, right.
What's the going rate for somebody part time? $10-$11 an hour? 12?
I don't know.
Can you check around with some of the other cities and see what
I can see what Norwich's paying their seasonal help.
Or Cologne.
They're Cologne or surrounding cities. Yeah. Mayor has it or New Germany.
Mm-hmm. What was it that when we contracted last time to have someone do the lawn of the week.
And I'll look at that too to see what we were saying for range.
I thought we did something like that for a part-time employee for the summer one time. Or we proposed and we talked about it. I know we talked about it, but I don't know if we went through it.
So is there anything else we have to be aware of, or are we kind of got it covered?
I think you've got it covered. I mean, when you do the interviews, and I think you guys would be interviewing someone, so I've already got questions drafted with points for you guys to circle and all of that kind of stuff, because all five of you would be doing that. So the personnel committee would not have the authority to hire. It would have to be
council.
The council.
But then when we get to that point, can it just be the personnel committee that does the hiring and then give a recommendation? Or should you have
that all of the council members be allowed to ask, maybe take turns asking questions and that?
Okay, so for the interview process, we should have the council. Mm-hmm. But now narrowing it down, say,
that
to three or the committee.
The personnel committee.
Yeah, that was my thought. Okay.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Now, is this applicant going to be just an applicant, male, female, or male?
Can't discriminate.
EEOE, we can't.
Well, I didn't know if you asked for.
Doesn't matter. Gender non specific.
As long as they can do
the
job.
It doesn't matter at all.
I just thought maybe if you'd ask for.
No, that would get you sued.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, you can't ask
somebody. That's a good question.
Well, you know, I didn't know.
And I have a whole thing about what you can. I already said I think this is Jewish, but what you can and cannot ask.
Yeah.
I have that.
Yeah.
That you guys should probably all read.
I'm not
cute. Sorry. But there are certain things that, you know, are not lawful to ask someone in an interview process.
And I thought that's why these meetings are, so you can ask that kind of question. There's only five or six of us here, and, you know, don't get embarrassed too bad.
that's a good question to ask, though.
Yeah.
So this personnel committee can't give a list of qualified candidates to Jeremy and that Jeremy select who he wants? It has to be approved by the council?
The council has authority to hire.
Jeremy
does not have authority to hire.
Right.
He can give opinions.
Well, yeah, Jeremy can give his recommendation, but it's not up to Jeremy, it's up to you guys.
So, now that we made that motion, I'm just thinking back, for that personnel committee, we said they would, two council members would serve on that. Should it just be them, or should I be serving on that also?
You can also be on that, because you're not a council member, so you don't have a quorum.
Okay.
And that's typical with the, you know, clerk, treasurer, city administrator,
right.
With the personnel committee.
So can we assume that, or do we need a motion on that, I guess is what I'm asking.
I would make a motion to add you to that.
Okay.
So moved. Second.
Motion's been made, seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
That's carried.
I have one question. I don't know if you can answer or we'd have to go somewhere else, but Is there a weight lifting amount, poundage wise, that a person, you can put in the application, let's say 75 pounds?
Yeah.
But if it goes up to like 100 or so, then it has to be, it's not a personal, one person lifting, they have to have assistance with a pulley system or something else to help them. Is there any type of limits on that?
I don't know off the top of my head what the limit would be, but you can certainly have as a job requirement someone's ability to lift. So you can have physical, and you should have physical duties, and I don't know the job.
But I think we say up to 100 pounds.
Okay, up to 100 pounds. Yeah. So there is a job description for that position, and it does have those physical duty requirements. And the only lawful question you can ask a potential employee is, can you perform essential functions of the job either with or without reasonable accommodation? And what that basically means is, if you can't submit a job description with the physical requirements, you can ask them, can you do those physical requirements? Because if someone can't, you're not violating their disability rights by not hiring them, as long as you've told them ahead of time what the requirements are. So, right now, the way the job description is set up and the application that I revised, that's what you can ask.
Yeah, I just always thought there was like OSHA or something says after so many pounds you have to have.
And that very well could be. I mean, I don't know that regulation off the top of my head. But is there a concern of if...
No, I'm just curious because...
Just that there's not some law that, because we have in the job description up to 100 pounds, that there's not some law that says... You know, the max you can say is 75.
Without assistance.
You can't say that somebody has to lift 300 pounds, you know.
Okay, I'm not aware of that. I can check the OSHA regulations, but I'm not aware of that off the top of my head. That's a good question, though, if I've never been.
Well, is it discrimination if it is someone who's partially disabled and only can lift 50 pounds and we turn them away for the job because they can't lift 100? Is that discrimination? It's kind of a gray area.
Well, so what the... Okay. Great question. Okay, so what the disability laws say is that an employer has a duty to reasonably accommodate an employee in order to perform the essential functions of the job. So if there was a lift assistance thing or something like that could enable or reasonably accommodate an employee to lift up to the 100 and the city could provide it, the city would need to do that. If getting that apparatus or whatever that would be is cost prohibitive or is not something that the city is able to do, I don't know, say whatever you have to lift, it's 100 pounds, you can't have a something help you do that, you have to be able to physically do it, so there's nothing the city could do to reasonably accommodate, then the city could say, sorry, you're disabled and we can't actually hire you because there's no accommodation we can give to you to perform this essential job function, which is lifting up to 100 pounds. Does that make sense?
But are we opening up ourselves up to a lawsuit by the disabled if we say something like that?
Well, it's the employer's burden to prove that there is no reasonable accommodation available. So what the law requires is this interactive process by which either the job applicant or the employee, if that were the case, and the employer talk about that issue. And sometimes it requires going to the employee's physician, having that employee's physician fill out a form, giving that physician a copy of the job description, having the physician write back and say, here's what I would think the city could do to enable my patient, or there really is nothing the city could do. This person can't do this job. So, I mean, as an attorney or as a council member, you guys aren't physicians, and you should never pretend to be one, because that's really not a good, so if you get to that issue of, do we have to look at that interactive process of reasonably accommodating, I mean, you really have to kick it off to a physician to make that judgment call, because we can't ourselves do that not knowing what someone's, conditions are. Does that make sense? Kind of? Hopefully.
Well, an example would be is if they can't drive and this job requires you to drive.
I mean, and there's nothing you can do. Off the hook.
I mean, you can't buy them a robot to drive for them.
Right. Right. But if there is something that the city could do to reasonably accommodate, then you would need to do that.
Like specially with the truck.
Yeah, or something like if you're sitting there typing and you need a special kind of keyboard or you need a standing workstation or you need a special chair to sit in or, there's all sorts of accommodations that businesses make and public entities make to employees.
Yeah, what do you dictate?
You do have that obligation to reasonably accommodate, but I think the fact that we're talking about it, you're aware of it, if that issue would come up, you would know enough to pause and think, okay, what can we cannot ask at this point? Because it's a job applicant, so there's only, certain inquiries that you can make. Once someone's an employee, you have a lot more freedom to engage in that interactive process and figure it out. But when someone's a job applicant, you're much more limited to the types of inquiries you can even make to that
job.
I would recommend setting a deadline because you could be getting...
Yeah.
If you need to run it again, you can run it again. But I think also people see a deadline, if they want the job, they're going to apply.
Mm-hmm. When the post office hires, they usually give a deadline. They say you must have your application / resume in by a certain amount of time. So I think we could probably do that as well, they're a government entity as well, also in their union, but that's a different story.
Go up to a 2-week period. 2 week,
yeah. In 2 weeks.
I think that's unreasonable. And then you can also post it, Jeremy, on the League of Minnesota Cities website.
Yep, I planned on doing that.
Okay.
Yep.
Because public employees looking for jobs will look at that website.
That's good. Is there anything else that you have, Dennis? Or this job application? Okay. Is there any other questions? Or the city employee application?
One thing I got. If we probably don't want to jump the gun, but could we make a motion for that special meeting for September 4th right now?
Yeah, you can make a motion to have. Yeah, you have. You're
going to
post the notice for it, but
right.
If you guys
want to
call.
You have to post the notice tomorrow.
Yes. That's a week from tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it would be.
Because Monday's a holiday.
I could. I think Thursday would be the latest. Can I? Because it would be Thursday, Friday, Tuesday. Because mm-hmm. the third day mm-hmm. at the actual meeting, that counts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, within the next day, 2 days, I have to post it. So that's why I'm asking that. We probably should. Because that way, this way, if we call it now, yeah. it's done, instead of having to have two council members come in and mm-hmm. sign off for it.
So that's Wednesday the 4th, Wednesday?
Yeah.
I'll make that motion.
Good.
Is there a second to that motion?
Time.
Time? But the budget meeting is about 7?
7,
yeah. How much time do we need? An hour?
I would hope. You know, we can do that at 7 and move the budget workshop meeting back to 8, and then I can do the posting.
Do it that way. Get it
or done. I suppose I could do a budget meeting to follow. So we just say 7 o'clock.
Do you have to make a posting for the budget meeting?
Yes.
So you could just do this all in one?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll amend my motion if it's required.
To change the time on that? To
7.
So basically I'd have you make a motion to hold a special meeting to discuss hiring of a part-time, an interim part-time employee mm-hmm. with the budget workshop meeting to follow.
Yeah, and also, are you going to have part of that for people service?
And people service, and discuss contracting services
yeah.
for water and sewer with people services.
Yep. Would you have them come during to that meeting?
If they could, yes.
Okay, because I've been at other council meetings where they have come and they will have a phone that they may want you to sign and you may want me to look at that.
I'd probably approve it. Usually when we do that, we have that per approval from
okay,
attorney. So,
yeah.
So we'd probably do some of that nature.
Mr. Rollins has made that motion. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried? Okay. We got the city clerk treasury report.
Kelly is done.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So one more thing, I just wanted to, when you get those applications in, the personnel committee and Jeremy would have the right to look at those. The rest of you council members, technically, you really should not be looking at private data unless you have a legitimate business reason to do it. Now, you would have a legitimate business reason to do it when you're in that meeting and you're interviewing that person. I mean, you certainly would be entitled to look at all of the application data and everything like that. But for the other application that you're not going to be interviewing, it really should be limited to the council members that are on that personnel committee so that you wouldn't have everyone. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Can I accept them? I mean, if like Jeremy's gone or somewhere, I can, if somebody walks in and here's my application,
yeah, you're
I can.
Yeah, council member, so we're fine. So.
I think that you're more looking at the fact that no one's perusing them and scanning them. And
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to protect the privacy.
Yeah.
Because technically, until you're going to be interviewing those folks, their data is totally private. And the rest of you shouldn't even necessarily know that they're even applying. I mean, their information is private. And that does become an issue with people who don't want other people to know that they're applying for that job. You know, but once it becomes a finalist or you interview them, then you do need to tell them it is public. I mean, the paper can ask who's, you know, it's a public meeting.
But it's not public until they're picked for an interview,
yeah,
correct?
Right.
All the others
are private.
Private.
Yep.
Do you have to keep those applications?
You need to keep
yes.
those applications, absolutely.
Is there a length of time? Or?
Yeah, I mean.
I'm sure there's record retention.
Yeah,
oh,
so
can,
the
yeah.
state record retention guidelines?
Yeah.
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 7 years, probably.
Okay.
Is there any more questions for Kelly? Or does Kelly have any more questions?
But only one thing, I guess. I'll work with you and get in a packet together.
Yes.
Because this will probably, you know, go out into the paper here shortly. And
yeah.
Then
yeah. Okay, guys.
All right, well, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for being patient
Thank
with
you.
My lengthy explanations.
Thanks for coming to the meeting.
Yeah,
thank you. All right.
Exxon is a city clerk treasurer report.
So basically, just under my report, I wanted to get into the budget.
Now, that's one thing. We're having these budget meetings after other meetings. Look at this. I'm freaking brain dead right now already. I mean, we could sit here till 11 o'clock doing stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't expecting tonight to be this. Tonight was supposed to be deal with change order and budget. That was it.
Yeah.
And it turned into, you know, I think way more than we all bargained for. I guess I personally feel that if we have this meeting, that one meeting shouldn't be more than an hour, and the budget really shouldn't be more than an hour. So it'd be 2 hours, I think, if you, you know, look at on the 4th.
Well, I'm saying a lot of this, to me, I went through the preliminary thing here.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't a whole lot of changes other than...
No, and really what I was going to go through, Dick, the only real discussion I is, unless there's anything in the budget as presented to you above and beyond what we did this year, the only discussion is the streets, as far as I'm concerned, budget-wise. Because in reality, if we just hop into it quick, you know, if you go on page 5 of 18, it's kind of the start of the... of the general fund for expenditures. You know, basically across the board. First thing I just want to say up, because we have a few new council members on. When we set the tax levy here for the preliminary budget, we can set it higher than we may need, and then we can lower it for the final. When we get to the final, whatever we set the preliminary at, we can't go any higher than that. So typically, this is just a very standard thing that I do every time for preliminary. Figure out where our expenses kind of have averaged out over a three-year period for next year's budget. This is just, you know, general maintenance things. Doesn't include any major capital purchases or things of that nature unless they are listed in the budget. So basically what I do, wages, we just do 3%. Just like I said, we throw out them numbers to go on the high end. Health insurance, 10%. Work comp, 5%. That's roughly where these, you know... And actually, health insurance has been less than that, but I don't want to get caught off guard with doing 2% raise and they come in at 8%, you know. So it's just, these are the standard rates I've used. Electricity, 3%. So I do that throughout all the funds on that. And then all I really wanted to do is did.
I got a question. On some of these categories, like if it's, if you look on park and recreation, or you look at community hall or whatever, you've got wages, you've got health insurance. Some categories have employee benefits. What is employee benefits?
What employee benefits are really, technically, that's the para, FICA, it's the taxes. It's the monies taking out of the paycheck.
So...
How about money's taken out for hospitalization premiums? Is that's also under employee benefits?
Well, there'd be health insurance.
Pardon?
There'd be health insurance.
So like that HSA deal.
So that's a different category then?
Health insurance.
It's all figured in.
Yeah. Like employee benefits is basically the taxes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we have to basically double up on Social Security, we double up on PARA, Medicare, you know, and then the federal and state, that's taken. Yeah. So it's basically the items taken out of them. So really, you could combine wages and benefits, but when I do auditing, that's how we have to disperse that.
Like here on 6 of 19?
Yes.
FD Relief Association, city's contribution?
Okay. So that's one thing I want, another thing I was going to touch base on, because I finally did get that, but yep. I still have some concerns and questions with it, because I finally got the report this morning.
Yep.
And
isn't it like 17.9?
Yes.
Next.
So
period.
And that's a number I plugged in now that I have it, and was going to go over that with council. And what that amount?
I mean, that frees up about $7,000.
Yeah, that was 17,978. But I have some questions that I need to get answered with that form, because they still have Scott Carls on there. And Greg Schultz.
Right. They will be because they're not paid out yet.
Okay. So that was my, you know, I needed, you know, I haven't got them answers, but that was my question.
See, I don't know, Schultze, if he's 50 yet, he's got to be 50. But see, that money still is allocated. It gets put in a separate
set aside, account into another account. Yep.
So that is still, I'm going to call it active.
Yeah. So my only question was, because it's still on there for 2014, and I didn't know if it should be towards 14 yet or not. But
they will be on 14 yet? For 2014?
Depends when they're 50.
Comes down to when they're 50.
Oh, okay. Got it. I got it.
See, and then they come off the rolls too again, and then the contribution will probably go down.
Yeah.
Because now you're paying for 20 plus years of service.
Right. That could drop substantially, maybe.
Well, it makes a difference.
Yeah, it does make a difference.
So, you know, bottom line, what I'm looking at is if we stay kind of close to last year's budget, unless you see any other major improvements that you want to see done above and beyond repairs and maintenance, general light repairs and maintenance, I'll say, for the park or any of the buildings, like there's any major hall improvements you feel we want to tackle next year, or anything to this building, or any other, you know, foreseeable capital improvement.
How about the generator for the lift station?
And that would fall under sewer, which typically then I really wouldn't worry about that till final budget. Because with sewer, we'd be setting that with sewer funds probably, so we'd be taking that by rates. So it's not as big a concern with this, because here, you wanted to transfer money from the general fund to the sewer fund to pay for it. And I believe that came in about $30,000.
Yeah, the only thing that kind of glared out to me, as long as we continue to work under the guise of not having the LGA added in.
Right.
As far as a revenue item.
That LGA money is like we're paying for that street.
So you still want to remove it?
Yeah. Because once we start, that's where a lot of other cities have gotten into trouble. Once they start putting that in their operating budget, and they plan on it, that's where they jack themselves.
I agree.
I don't have
a problem with that. Not at all.
No, I'm just going to ask a question. I missed the part when Justin Black was here. With the bid on Robert, were hydrants discussed again?
No.
Because, see, to me, that would be a point of next year LGA money. If we need a hydrant or something.
Sure. And if you look under the water fund, I kind of try to make little notes. So on page 15 of 18, see bullet point 1 there. Nothing's in the budget, but if we were to look at equipment improvements for 2014, I made a note replacing water hydrants about $9,000 each. So then that would be something we'd have to add into the water budget. And if we were to do that, you know, we probably have to look at transferring money from the general fund.
Do we
the
have
water
to
fund is basically staying afloat.
Do we have to take it from the water fund? If say we earmarked some of the LGA money?
Yeah, definitely.
Then it wouldn't affect it.
No, exactly. So we definitely can do that.
But you're still going to transfer that.
So basically one of the things I want to point out, what to think of is, like I said, major improvements. You know, like siding things that are going to be $5,000-$10,000, other than that are general maintenance items that you have every year. And any capital improvements or major equipment purchases. This is really what needs to be put in the budget now for considering it.
How about that bathroom down there at the park?
Do you think an old 14 that's a go, or?
That's.
Or we.
If we can get MinSpec to tell us what that.
Well, tomorrow hopefully we'll know that.
You know, because that's the big thing is right now one of the pushes we're doing with the Lions Club is that. Mm-hmm. We may earmark one of our events, and then by earmarking that, we're going to see if LCIF will match the fundraising for that time frame. And then I've also talked with Ellen and his group about potentially tapping into the Hamburg Fund as well. So,
excellent.
The city's aspect of it may not be as large, but it may be something.
that there may be a certain dollar amount that needs to be set aside. If
but
it's
our stumbling block is determining if we can use that existing building.
Yeah, or versus...
Or do we need to do something
Or
we're
getting into other bigger costs.
Yes.
That isn't feasible, right? Because another thing to think of or look at when we do the budget too is this, if you look in here and go to page, you know, 9, that kind of tells you what kind of balance and what monies are available for other type items in the city savings account. You know, you see that we're roughly estimating, you know, having $196,000 in that account. Some of that money is earmarked for certain things, and I can break that down for you.
And the 196 doesn't include LGA, or does that include LGA?
That has nothing to do with LGA.
Okay.
I don't even associate that with it, so that way it's there, it's available, it's almost cash on hand. So, you know, when you break that down, you know, kind of the projected, you know, we're looking at just equipment replacement fund or any, or maintenance type fund. You know, equipment replacement, we have $114,300 in. That's just, it's not earmarked for anything special, but it's just for equipment type items. There's $62,000 in maintenance, so any type of maintenance, major repairs or capital improvements we may need to make, there's $62,000 in there for that. Community center addition, we have $10,000 in that fund. Hall renovations, there's $6,600 there. There's $2,000 at the end of the year for park handicap bathrooms, which we talked about putting $2,000 in there. I do have in the 2014 budget another $2,000 to go for that. So for next year, we have $4,000 for that project if it was a go already. That's in the budget. And then also there's, you know, $1,750 in interest, $1,750 in interest.
We're
continuing
our funds for the FD trucks and all this, so.
Yeah, and probably one of the other things I was going to go over, concerns I have, is we need to check with the townships. I don't have it in there now, but to see if they're going to contribute for future purchases. So basically extend what their current payment was and
the
put that
was
that they were.
To keep that going.
Right. Right.
Because I've sat in, I think you...
Yep. And I've sat in their meetings. And
even though when
seemed
it gets
to be the
paid,
consensus.
That the townships and the city keep
contributing
that kind of amount
yep.
towards future purchases. So there isn't a, wow, all of a sudden here
right.
it is. You know?
Yeah, because... You know, pages 11 through 14 are basically, to be honestly, are set in stone. I mean, it's what our debt is debt.
Yeah, I can't change that.
So.
Pay it off.
So, like I said, the major thing that I'm just going to throw this out. So, say we receive LGA, right? Which we should receive
yeah.
LGA. So, say we receive LGA next year. With this budget, there's $104,500. That can change. I'm not saying that's what we're going to have available next year. You know, you got a margin of error there because we don't know what. I can't predict what electric rates are actually going to be, what insurance rates actually are going to be. I won't know that till, you know, a lot of that till October. And typically, I try to guess high, but sometimes that don't happen because we predicted. I think I went 3 or 5% sometimes, and Excel went up 9% this past year.
Well, actually, the state cut that back to 3.8.
Right.
So we should get.
So we'll be getting
you should start getting a rebate
right.
on that.
So, but it's just so there's
exactly,
some unpredictable
yeah, exactly.
things that you just can't. But
oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
But you know, we try to cover the base. So if you look at that, like I said, we've got $104,500 to play with, and that's for all funds. So like I said, whether you want to dedicate that to streets. You know, doing a street project, so like you said, we don't have to, you know, do, you know, an assessment. You know, so there are monies available for that. But and then also, like I said, it would include, have to part of that, you'd have to take into consideration any other major improvement. And like I said, what we already have in there, you know, if you look at page 8, kind of defines, you know, the transfers. We have $12,000 there to transfer the water fund, bullet 18, $6,800 into the stormwater fund yet. We have $5,000 going into equipment replacement and maintenance, another $5,000, community center addition, $2,000, as I mentioned earlier, park bathroom, another $2,000. And then 22 discusses, you know, keeping that $10,000 putting towards future capital purchase for fire equipment.
So all those transfers, the 102, those transfers were in the 102 or not in the 102?
With them transfers, that still leaves us with the 104.5. So it's included in the budget. So, I mean, honestly, barring any major issues, I mean, I think really city is in a good financial position, you know, cash flow wise. But, you know, there are things to consider, though, that, you know, we are going to need, especially, you know, replacing items. And, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, I don't think I have it on the wish list yet, but maybe I should throw it on there. But for the water fund, you know, water treatment plant. Or a water tower.
Policing, you're not thinking that's going to go up? Probably.
What did I say? 3% maybe or something, I think I put in there. I
see, you got it down here.
You know, if you look to the right, there's that little column. You'll see with the percentages.
Oh, okay. So tonight we don't need to do much of anything, right? We don't have to set the
No, it's just if
we do that at the next.
What meeting. I like is these two meetings. I like to have before we kind of have to set it on September 10th. We'll have to set the preliminary. It's just if you have items, you know, one so you can see where we're at, you know, so we have something on paper. Two for you to throw out things and say, hey, I want that bouncy thing in there. I really think that's a good idea. Put that in the parks fund. Add it now. You know, if we're going to consider anything that we've talked about over the year or the past, we should put it in now so I can plug it in there, and then I can come back to you and say, okay, here's where we're at now. You know, I think it's the easiest way to do the budget. I mean, I'm not saying one way or the other, but, you know, I've been doing it 17 years, so I have a good handle on, you know, where expenses come and go. I mean, you can never predict everything, but... you know, if you know you want to do something, we need to add it now. You know, if you really feel, you know, like Mr. Odom said, you know, hey, we need to get that generator in here. We need to get that sorted out. Something's got to be done with that. Or if you know, hey, the truck, I know the truck needs new tires. That's, you know, that could be $1,000 if we get that in the budget.
Me, what you said about the water tower, I know we're getting this one painted. Is this going to be the last time? That's a... I heard that once. Now, are we...
That was that one company that kind of condemned it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I won't know until they paint it and they give us a report.
Okay.
But what the current condition is.
I was just looking to see if we have to budget...
And very possibly could be.
Yeah, but I was just thinking if we...
Usually we don't paint it. We paint it every 5 years. So.
And that money gets put into just regular maintenance...
It goes into repairs and maintenance.
Yeah,
line
the whole general. Okay. Yeah.
It was the last time it was painted? It was for Zimmerfest for the 125-year celebration.
Yeah, it would have been 08. Yeah. And that contract will be up at the end of this year, so I'm sure they'll be coming to a meeting this winter to re-up that contract or look at it. But I think what we should look at is not include just doing the maintenance and cleaning, not the painting, on the next contract. One thing I did do, just to, wanted to point out too, was streets. I added, because most likely, you know, unless we don't do a street project, we can take it out, but I added $10,000 in there for engineering fees. So if we do a street project, that's in there. But, you know, I'd rather have it in now. If we decide not to do a street project, we think that's going to be downscaled or bigger, we can adjust it at that time. The whole main thing right now is to throw everything on the table that we're thinking of doing for next year Then when we get into November, we can decide, you know, I really think we should scratch that, do this, don't do that. You know, and really the bottom line comes down to where do you want to set the tax levy at?
So I guess if you've got questions, you bring them next week.
Yeah, or is there something you want to add to this budget?
Because you had mentioned the bounce thing. You have that in your area.
On the
wish list.
Not on the budget, but I put 2,000 on there, so we'd have something, you know, pretty by decent. That we'd have to take off the wish list and, you know, add into the park fund or something. So if we're thinking of doing things, we need to be adding them now before September 15th. Like I said, we can always take them out.
There was some talk once about down at the park with the tar or the bituminous down there about putting a new layer on top or adding into that.
Yeah, and Bargain's supposed to be doing that.
Okay.
This year yet. So that'll be an issue. Bargain's a little effect next year.
I mean, making it bigger onto the other.
Oh, and I think we would tie that in with a street project.
Okay.
If we were going to look at doing that, yeah. It just makes sense to.
I didn't know if you wanted to do
it. Do it at the time of a street project. And what he's talking about is the parking lot in the park where the basketball hoops are in the field. There, we looked at extending that, making that wider, and tarring over where the gravel is there. I mean, that's been talked about for years. But.
Was there any more talk on that trail in the park? That tarred trail going around the park?
No, it's not in here.
Okay.
If you want to consider something like that, like I said, then, you know, I can add it to here.
I think it'd be so nice to have a trail like that, east back towards.
Well, like I always said, a lot of things would be nice.
Yeah.
How much you willing to pay?
Yeah. Well, voice my opinion, put it on the wish list.
And I'm just trying to bring up things that, you know, so after this, say, oh, we should have said mentioned that or something.
Yeah. But, well, I'll add walking trail. No idea what cost would be, but
yeah.
if you want to say in 10 years we want to do it now, then maybe we just want to set aside $1,000 a year or something for it. Or, you know.
Well, kids with their little pedal things, you keep them off the street.
So, if you have any other comments, you can bring them to the next meeting and we'll discuss them then.
Yeah, like I said, sometimes, you know, we may not budget something and something may happen, you know, next year that eats up a lot of budget of something, and we'll deal it at that time. And two, you know, that's why we have this, you know, city savings account too. I say every time I do this, if you feel there's an easier way for you to understand or to change the process or how to go through it, I'm open to that too. I'm also open. Come in. I'll sit down and meet with you if you want to go over it too. If there's something you don't understand or something you want to understand, I'm more than willing to go over it with you. The format, I'm not big fan of changing the format much because I use the same type format that I use for the financial statements, which also the format that our auditor uses. And I believe that's how you should be doing things because it sure makes life a lot easier when everything's similar to your audit. Now, the only other thing, if nobody has nothing else on the budget, only other item I did want to go through is that, you know, from last meeting I did talk to Vance Blonick, the departments, and he did send a nice letter out to all the residents at his apartment. So just kind of, Chris lives in that area and Dick or whoever's in that area, kind of monitor that situation, see how we do. And then maybe we get this part-time help, we can have him line some up with SDS to paint the curbs.
That would be good.
And go that route. You can go on others. I know there's one other thing, and I'll come back to it and go on the council.
I got to approve payment for additional August 2013 claims. I don't know if everybody has looked at those yet. I'm going to need a motion on that.
So if there isn't any questions, I'll give you the dollar amount here. So the dollar amount of the added claims would be $27,453.87.
For a motion.
What happened to the Rob's Electric one?
Oh, yeah. If there's discussion on that, I'm still holding that. And
I kind of read the explanation.
There's an explanation in there, breakdown. That's the best I got from them. So,
well, we can't assume that they're going to come out here for free to look at, you know, the design, where you had to make different holes, where to mount it. I mean, that's all extra.
Yeah, and I think it's just one of them unforeseen things. I mean, someone, you know, they can say, hey, this should take 3 hours. Well, if they're not an electrician, how do they, you know, they may not know or
but, I mean,
should have known.
There was so much added stuff besides, over and above. Yeah. I mean, did you read through it, everybody?
Mm-hmm. I was there for when they were replacing the panel. That the first day it was raining, so they called the bump steer on that one. But I was there when they helped replace the panel. And it took a little bit of time, but he did a good job on that. As for any of the other stuff, I...
On that first day, did they do work, or did they just stand around for 2 hours?
It was raining. The first day, I mean?
Well, the one day, the 8th or the 9th, it's 2 hours, and then the 10th, it's 6 hours. So if it rained on the 9th, why were they standing around?
I think it rained on the 25th. Because it was the first time he came out and started it. And I also did find out there were probably some other issues in there too. I know, I think there is one that was getting installed, there's a piece got broken on it too for the alarm.
It was one day it had rain, and then it was raining pretty good. We called it off, and then the next day I was there and helped.
Did you work with the water in the rain? Before,
yeah.
Until it got too heavy,
yeah,
to where it got dangerous.
So is that $1,500
in
that
$27,453? No, it is not. Yeah, that I'll give you another. So with adding paying Rob's, it'd be $28,958.69.
Is there any more discussion on the electrical panel?
You gotta pay it.
So
you're not gonna take it out.
No. So I'm looking for a motion to approve the claims.
So moved.
And one inch.
And 16361 and 16367 to 16377.
Yeah. Motion's been made. Are we looking for a second?
So moved, yes.
Second.
Approved. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. Looking for city council reports. Mr. Orr.
Well, so we talked about the lift station. Alarm, I'll get back to you on that. The generator. I didn't know that Dennis apparently had already contacted some generator company. Advice on it, and when that was brought up last meeting, Larry Mueller was concerned about that, so I kind of just did some checking around, and so I'm meeting with somebody tomorrow to find out what they can do, and also I'm meeting with somebody on Thursday.
Okay. Well, all bids are very well accepted. I mean, that's what they're for. All bids are all different kinds.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that, you know, we're looking at about $30,000, but
Ziegler, Caterpillar Ziegler has a program where it's like 4% interest and it's like $500 or $600 a month and over a 5-year contract. If you wanted to do that, to take and rent a unit, it's $345 a month. For $345 a week, $1,000-something a month. So that doesn't make any sense because in 3 years you could buy the thing.
Do you know how big a one we need?
So anyway, when we get that, I'll send Jeremy one of my infamous emails, and I'm sure he'll pass it along. The other thing is we had somebody annihilate two mailboxes down across the street from, whose house is that, Jeremy?
I believe that it was...
across from Greenhagen?
Yeah.
It was basically across from Comiskey's, but a little bit east on the
Laverne?
North side of the
Laverne.
Road.
Thank you. Problem. Yes.
And so I was coming home one night, and I noticed that the mailbox was in the middle of the road in their front yard and whatnot. And so my immediate concern then was the memorial. So I went down to the memorial to see if anybody was down there, but there were people in the shelter to the east of the memorial. Everybody probably got that email I sent to Jeremy. So I called the sheriff's office, and I waited for them up by Mueller's, and they didn't show up. And they said that they were on a follow-up in Hamburg, which, like I said, didn't understand. And all of a sudden, I'm getting ready to leave Mueller's to go home, and a sheriff's car comes flying through town going east. So I don't know what was going on there. But by the time I got home, a deputy had called me, and so I basically told her what I observed. And I said, you know, we've had a problem in the past with people out roaming around. I can't understand why somebody's in our shelter.
Yeah, there's no business for me.
And I mean, and I was driving along with my air conditioning on and the window down, so I had road noise, but I could still hear the radio, you know, from underneath the shelter.
How many people were under there?
Pardon?
How many people did you see?
I saw at least two, but I mean, it's dark in there, obviously, so, you know, I could see two of them as my headlights went in there and I came around the back of the memorial, but I did reiterate to the deputy when he called me that I says, you know, we've had a problem there, we've talked, I told him I was on the council, and we've talked at the council meeting with people, you know, being roaming around and the vandalism we had. Well, then the next day on my way to work, I saw that there was an XL Energy truck parked there, and there was two guys standing out, so I pulled over, and I talked to them, to the one person, and he was the guy to the east of the house that was originally had the mailbox ripped out. His also was gone, but that was sheared off right at the ground, and the pole was damaged, so that's got to be replaced, and so there's a red ribbon on it, so that's basically what's going on with that.
Do they seem or think that somebody hit them with their vehicles, or somebody was? Because some of them close, sir.
Yeah. They had to. You'd think there would have been some damage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was
I went and looked at it after I got your email. And
that would have left a mark.
Well, and that pipe, you know, that's a pipe like about this big around.
Yeah. And that one was a 4x4.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't no 1x1 post it was on. It was, Bob?
I got nothing.
Chris?
The only thing is, last week I was at that Southwest Transit Alliance meeting.
Yeah.
They re-elected the new board, didn't really change from what it was before, and they're going to try to do some lobbying. They're trying to get MnDOT commissioner involved now because they want to, those two-lane areas on either side of Cologne, they want to get it so it's 4-lane. But there's funding issues, and
right.
Highway 212 and Highway 5 aren't even on like the 20-year map right now for projects and things of that nature. So they're trying to get people to push the legislators to include those, even though that seems to be a main artery from here to the Dakotas.
Yeah.
But that's all I have.
Okay. I had one issue with told Jeremy about one alley was looked like it was getting overgrown, overtaken, and he was going to check into it a little bit, but that's all I've got. Mayor Maltz?
Did they talk about that line in the under the ballpark that's plugged?
Oh, no.
Maybe when the people come to jet and televise the others?
Well, now, I know I had talked to Dennis, and he was going to work with the baseball club and do
it. He can't get the camera in.
Get through.
So
maybe we could have them get it.
Because they're just concerned if something has to be dug up, at least then it can settle and everything will be back to normal by the time tournament time is.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So that's one thing. I see you got a letter out with the weeds around some of the buildings that in town here that are rented and whatever.
Yep, so if anybody ever has nuisances or anything, either email or call. I've even said if you see it at night, call that night. That way it doesn't get lost or dropped, and yep. Then we'll get it in the morning. And
I also have a form that I can hand out again where you can list everything that's wrong with what residents can hand it in to.
You were talking about STS, repainting the curbs. A new guy isn't going to really know the contacts, who to get a hold of.
No, I would contact.
Okay, if you see on YouTube, you could.
And have him work with him.
Yeah,
sorry.
I
wouldn't have him do
on
that.
On a little piece of paper, and I got it.
Yeah. So we have the name. I would take care of that.
Crosswalk, the painting down there, never heard nothing yet?
I have not. I have sent an email to Mr. Weckman and Linden. And I've not heard nothing back. I could forward it to you, but basically I had said, well, I've sent one to Bill and now one to Lyndon Robjet, who work as county engineers. And I said, before the County Road 50 overlay project was completed, it used to be a crosswalk on County Road 50 located by the State Bank of Hamburg. Yada, yada, yada. Crosswalk was installed for access by Centennial Park. Do you know if this crosswalk painting is going to be replaced? Or is this something the city would be responsible for? And I've also asked him also, who is responsible for crack sealing of County Road 50? So I've so I maybe need to make a phone call with. I've had issues getting information with Mr. Weckman in the past, so I'm going to Mr. Rogers on that issue.
Being you were here 17 years already, and we've had on occasion here state baseball tournaments hosted with Hamburg and other towns.
Yes.
Your memory, has the baseball club ever approached the city for any kind of funding to put this on?
No. It's one thing the city should be very proud of. And if the city has ever given them anything, it's been very minimal.
Well, because I had a resident from Green Isle call me.
And so did I.
Questioning if, because they've got some issues over there, which that's
another thing to point out. Over all the years, the city has put very little money into that park.
They're pretty self-sufficient
down
there.
And they also pay for the electricity for the lights, the baseball club does.
Oh, they do? I thought we picked that up.
No, baseball club pays that.
Okay.
So, about all we pay for is gas. And they do the mowing even.
Yeah.
But we pay for the gas.
And the water we supply.
And the water, yeah. So, like I said, very minimal that the city. The city should be very proud of the baseball club they have.
That's all I got.
I've got one question.
Okay.
Jeremy asked me to bring it up. But at where I sit, my feet aren't very much on the ground, and right now I'm using two books to keep my feet up a little bit. It's more comfortable when I'm working. And I was wondering if I could get a foot rest to put my feet on. And right now the two I found, one was $33.99 and one was $49.99. And I was just wondering if council would okay if I purchased one. It does make my life easier and more comfortable when I'm sitting at the computer.
How much would another book cost?
Free, but it looks really bad.
I'll move to get her what she needs with less than $60.
Second for that.
Second.
Motion was made and seconded to get Sue get your foot rest. And, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.